Will everyone in the Senate and the upper galleries please rise for the prayer by our chaplain, the Reverend Gauck, and remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
From the first letter of Romans, we hear that, owe no man anything but to love one another. Heavenly Father, we begin a new and shortened week, and with its pressures and differences with one another. So let us be reminded that as your children, we owe to you and all humankind the debt of love. Let us express this love and kindness and helpfulness to those we work with and those we meet each day. Let us live as if love is not optional, but something we have to do daily as our own. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Please be seated. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Brown, Callahan, Chappelle Nadal, Crowell, Cunningham, Curls, Dempsey, Dixon, Engler, Goodman, Green, Justice, Keviny, Kehoe, Kraus, Lager, Lamping, Lemke, Mayer, McKenna, Munslinger, Nieves, Parson, Pierce, Ferguson, Richard, Ridgway, Roop, Schaff, Schaefer, Schmidt, Stouffer, Wasson, Wright-Jones.
Senator from Holt. Senator from the 24th. A quorum being present, the Senate is in session. Madam Secretary, would you please read the journal?
Journal of the Senate, second regular session, 50th day, Thursday, April 5th, 2012. The Senate met pursuant to adjournment. President Kinder in the chair. Reverend Carl.
Senator from Lawrence, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I move further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no.
I could see.
The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it.
I think I'd heard him.
Introduction of guests. Introduction of guests. Seeing no objection, the chair would like to recognize some guests with Missouri State Youth Government Day. Alex Slocum, Dave Mudd, Michael DeFord, Nathan Crayer, Kayla Goth, and Garen Wagner. Would the Senate please make them feel welcome? Thanks for coming today. Further introduction of guests. Introduction of guests. Petitions, memorials, and remonstrances. Resolutions. Concurrent resolutions. Senator from Lawrence.
President, without objection, the Senate will go to the business order of business of reports of standing committees, and I have a committee report on behalf of your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics.
Seeing no objections, please present the report. We are on reports of standing committees. Madam Secretary, please read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics, to which was referred Senate Substitute Number 2 for Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 806, begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Also, Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 837 begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Respectfully, Senator Goodman.
Senator from Lawrence.
Thank you. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection on the formal calendar.
Seeing no objection, the order of business will be Senate bills for perfection on the formal calendar. Senate Joint Resolution Number 30, the senator from the 24th. Senate Joint Resolution Number 30, the senator from the 24th.
Mr. President, I move that Senate Joint Resolution 30 be taken up for perfection.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Aye. All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from the 24th.
Mr. President, I now move that Senate Joint Resolution 30 be declared perfected in order printed. I'd like, this is the resolution whereby, by vote of the people, we would combine the Lieutenant Governor and Governor as far as the ticket is concerned when they run for the office. I could tell you my thoughts behind this. I could tell you that seven states don't even elect a lieutenant governor, don't have a lieutenant governor, that 25 states elect their governor and lieutenant governor jointly. I could tell you that those facts, that's not why I brought this bill forward. My thinking on this was, you know, modeling after the federal level with the president and vice president, that one of the things that I think the citizens of Missouri are crying out for is there opportunity to interact with the executive branch, to interact with the governor's office, both during the campaign season itself, when citizens are trying to learn everything they can about the potential candidates for our executive office, the executive branch, and then upon election, the ability to interact, to meet with the governor, to contact the work with the governor's office, I think that by doing this, we essentially create a second arm, a right-hand person for the governor, both as a candidate, that person have the opportunity to interact with citizens of Missouri, and then upon, once they're in office, they'd be part of the administration. I also think that, I've learned in my brief period of time down here just how important the executive branch is. The governor of the state of Missouri is, I think, probably the only person that he or she alone could move big ideas, that they have the platform, the podium, to get in front of the citizens and educate the citizens and move along big ideas. I think that when we elect a governor, you know, we elect a governor based upon their ideas and principles, and the way we're structured right now, if something happens to that governor, we could elect, the lieutenant governor could step in the governor's place. The lieutenant governor could have very, very different ideas and principles. He could be from a different party. And I think that I'd ask this question is, can you imagine if the way we elected our Vice President of the United States was by election, that we had a primary and that we could actually have two different parties represent the executive branch and two different parties be in the line of secession? So I think those are all the reasons why I brought this forward. I think that I also think in the last one, the idea would be this idea that the interaction between the General Assembly, in our case the Senate, our interaction with the governor, I think, could be enhanced. Really, the governor could work with the lieutenant governor and have lieutenant governor, obviously this is not to change his duties, but the lieutenant governor could work in conjunction with the governor and take on whatever role the governor would have him take on, one of which could be to work closely with us. So with that, I would take any questions.
You've heard the motion from the senator from the 24th. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from St. Francis, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would seek unanimous consent to introduce some special guests.
Seeing no objection, proceed.
First, my apologies to the senator from the 24th, but you may be interested in this. On my left, your right. This first one's a tough one. Vice President of State Street Bank, which has 1,500 employees in Kansas City. Jivan Rampuria, from Boston, from State Street Bank, and Kim Chamberlain, the Managing Director and General Counsel for State Government Affairs of SIFMA, which is the Securities Industry Association that's here today, and then my good friend for over 25 years, Mike Esser. Last time Mike was on the floor here, our former colleague Ken Jacobs tried to get him kicked out of the chamber for being a lobbyist, since he's not a lobbyist and just a member of Edward Jones, and represents us from time to time, did not succeed, so we're happy they're there. I wanted to remind the body that our industry, Senator, has 16,700 employed people in the state of Missouri with one of the highest average salaries of any industry in the state of Missouri. It's one we need to continue to build on. We've got the largest brokerages in the country outside of Manhattan, basically, and it's one that is one of the biggest industries in this state. 3,600 other people are employed directly from those securities industries. We work in that industry, and I know that it's huge. The revenue that's brought in by this industry in the state is one of the top in the industry, only to ag, if you combined everybody, and some medical industry. But security is huge, and we wanted to recognize them. And if the body would make them feel welcome, I'd appreciate it.
Would the guests of the Senator from St. Francis please stand? Please stand and be welcome. Thanks for coming to Jefferson City today. Senator from St. Francis, for what purpose
Senator
do you stand?
To inquire the Senator of the 24th.
Senator, do you yield? He does. Proceed.
Your bill came through the committee. I wish that the floor would pay attention to this because we're setting precedent for the future. I'd just soon get rid of the lieutenant governor's position personally and cut the salary and go. But if we're going to do it your way and elect them together, people better pay attention because people at home are going to ask, what did you just do? Because we're going to be electing them together now in the future. So, Senator, good luck.
Thank you for your support.
I don't know if you've heard much out of there, but this will affect elections to come, and people should know about it because this is one of those things you're going to talk about.
The response I've heard from people is that this is common sense. The support for it has been very positive, and I appreciate you.
I bet if you would have made the bill to just eliminate the position, your response would have been better. Thank you.
Further discussion. The senior senator from St. Charles County. For what
purpose
do you
rise? Thank you, Mr. President. May I inquire the senator from the 24th?
Senator from the 24th, do you yield? He does. Proceed.
Thank you for yielding, Senator. Just a couple of questions. So this joint resolution would combine lieutenant governor, or they would run it as a ticket?
They would. There would be a primary, primary for governor, and then it's outlined in, I think it's 11 weeks before the general election, the winner of the primary would be obligated to name his lieutenant governor, and then they would run as a combined ticket.
Okay, so the winner of the primary names the lieutenant governor candidate, and they run as a slate.
They run together, yes.
Okay. Are you making any other changes to the lieutenant governor's office?
Not at all. The duties and responsibilities are as outlined now, and the only change is how they come to be elected.
So after the August 7th or 8th or whatever that is, then how long do they have to name the...
The actual day, it's essentially 11 weeks before the general election that the primary winner for governor has to name his lieutenant governor, and when he or she doesn't, then they no longer are the primary candidate.
Then if they don't...
Then they can't run. So
okay.
So it makes it a duty of the winner of the primary to name lieutenant governor. So they can't choose not to have lieutenant governor.
All right. And is there any restrictions on who they can name? Can they name...
No, it's exactly the same qualifications that are required today to run as lieutenant governor. So over the age of 30, citizen of the United States for 10 years, resident of Missouri for a year, same exact qualifications.
So could I name a family member if I wanted to run?
Yes, you could.
Could have the Roop and Roop ticket.
Yes, you could make that unprecedented.
I can say my own name.
Senators are not allowed to use senators' names on the floor.
Mr. President.
Senator from the second.
I would like to inquire you. Believe we cannot use other senators' last names. I believe we can use our own last name.
I'll have to research that. Proceed.
Great. Could I get that in double spaced? Big large font. You know, triple sided.
Proceed.
Great, thank you. So I'm sorry. Before
you can choose to name any person you like. You know, it's interesting that you bring up this point. One of the really important duties of our governor is, I think first and foremost, naming his cabinet, naming the people that would help him run the state, and then also we see that in some of the appointments they make, And as far as having an understanding of how the executive might make that decision, clearly one of the most important first decisions that candidate for governor is going to make is his or her determination as to who will be his or her lieutenant governor. So I think think about how much analysis goes into when a candidate for president goes to decide who's going to be the vice presidential candidate on the ticket. So much analysis has gone into, well, you know, how does this person make this decision? Is he making a good decision, or is she making a bad decision? I think in terms of Missouri being a state, and we are a bellwether state for lots of different reasons, one of the biggest is of which is that we have big pockets of all different types of citizens that make up the country. We've got a big urban and suburban population, a big rural population. We have more women than men in our state. We're fully represented by all the minorities. And I would imagine that those candidates for governor, when they make that decision, it's more and more likely that they might say, well, look, I need to have diversity with respect to gender, diversity with respect to race. Maybe I'm ultra-conservative. My lieutenant governor candidate will be more moderate. Maybe I'm a rural candidate for governor. Maybe I need an urban candidate for lieutenant governor. So I think that it would introduce all types of opportunities for the citizens of Missouri to see exactly how the person that they're considering to be the executive of their state, how that person makes decisions.
Very good. Well, I appreciate you walking me through that.
Further discussion. Senator from the 11th, for what purpose do you rise?
May I inquire of the Senator from the 24th?
From the 24th?
Yes.
Senator from the 24th, do you yield?
Or he the does. Bill proceed. Sponsor, to those who maybe weren't listening to my request for inquiry.
Senator from the 24th does yield.
Oh, thank you, Mr. President.
Proceed.
Thank you. You know, I'm not going to make a point of getting up on every change you make to the system or recommend making a Chisholm. I actually wanted to kind of walk through. You're essentially emulating the federal system where after the primary, the candidate for the two major parties, but all the other parties, would pick a person that would serve as lieutenant governor?
Correct.
Okay. Are there any underlying, beyond what's already in the Constitution, qualifications for that office?
No, the qualifications stay exactly the same.
Okay. And so we're removing popular sovereignty right now of selecting that office, right?
I didn't hear what your question, the first part.
To a degree, we are removing the independent election of a lieutenant governor.
Correct.
They, whoever they are, run as a team in which the voters kind of combine two people into one ticket, right?
Exactly.
Okay, so exactly like the president. I don't know if you've looked at other states. I believe Georgia does this. Is that
Yeah. Well,
correct?
There's quite a few states that, as I mentioned in my opening remarks, there's...
Well, let me ask you very right. genuinely. I'm totally... You know, I don't have any deeply concerns about what you're proposing. But one in the back of my head, and look, the status quo, regardless of how people are elected or whatever, I wonder if there isn't an element. Is one of the states that does this Louisiana? And I'm really asking genuinely. I don't know the answer.
The Louisiana is a state that has a separate primary and general elections. They do it the way we do it.
Does the governor in Louisiana pick the lieutenant governor?
No.
Okay.
So they're one of the 18 states that does it exactly the way we do it now. There are 18 states that have, they elect the lieutenant governor the same way we do in Missouri.
Okay. And the reason I ask that is, I think maybe prior to that history, when one of the Longs was governor, it
Huey
was
Long.
Either Earl or Huey P. Long.
Okay.
It was probably Earl in the 60s. I seem to remember in the annals of my political history that there was something where he was going to resign because they had term limits or something, and he was going to appoint his lieutenant governor was sort of his lackey, right, that he'd appointed, and they'd run as a ticket, and the team got elected because of the popularity of Earl Long. And then he was going to resign, and the way around the Constitution was his lieutenant governor, who is now governor, because he resigned, was going to appoint him governor again, which was a constitutional loophole. Now, under full disclosure, I'm sure that our Constitution is better crafted, maybe, than the state of Louisiana. Nor do we use the Napoleonic Code as the basis of law in our state. I know that there's that, but I guess what I'm getting to is a more general thing, which is, do you have any concern that if you're removing this sort of independent election of an independent office, that it opens itself up to sort of more cronyism, more lackeyism, and that maybe while the lieutenant governor steps in when the governor is out of the state or incapacitated, that we're kind of removing one of the checks to executive power? That would be the only thing that I have in the back of my head, that it might open up to somebody who's real popular and they pick a lackey, regardless of party, just to be their lieutenant governor. And then that kind of opens it up to where you don't have that check, that sense of competition, or that check and balance anymore. Do you see where I'm getting at?
No, I appreciate your concern.
I'm not sure I'm right about that Earl Long thing, but I think it was in the movie Blaze, and I could be wrong. I'm not going to go based on a movie, but it was.
I guess
I think Paul Newman played Earl Long, and I think they had some animated thing where he was going to resign, and whether that actually happened, but being Louisiana, it wouldn't surprise me. The premise is: are you concerned at all about any? I've never been in the executive branch of any government I've served. I've always been in the legislative branch. And people on the floor have heard me say this my whole career. I don't fear the other party in the political process. I always fear the executive branch, regardless of whoever is there. Because the only check on that is the judiciary and the legislature. So when there's a potential of putting too much power in the executive, and now we're sort of giving that person, while it's approved by the voters, the ability to pick their team, you see, that's kind of the basis of my concern. And just so you know, it's not to a level of I'm going to hold up your bill and stop your bill from. I genuinely wanted to discuss this with you. Do you have any concern that this could lead to more cronyism in the system, less scrutiny, less transparency, and all that?
Well, I think you make very valid points, when I contemplate what you're contemplating, I think about how our federal system has run for all these years now, and I also think about, yes, we've got to trust these two people that we elect, the citizens of Missouri would elect as a team. We trust them to work as a team and to have their actions be honest and forthright. The potential to do less than, I mean, what you're describing is there a loophole here that someone could take advantage of and do harm to the state of Missouri, citizens of Missouri? I think that there are quite a few ways in which, if somebody had that ill intent today, as we're organized today, that they could do similar things, but what we don't.
And I will acknowledge it's non-unique to the status quo.
I think.
But before we get to that point, I just want to make sure we're not doing something that unintentionally makes that easier or more likely, is where I'm coming from.
Well, and I think, you know, I'm coming at this from, I'm looking at the upside. I'm looking at, can these two people really change the experience that the citizens have with respect to the executive branch? Can they feel more part of the executive branch? You know, people have, when we look at the federal level, there are people that, it's often said that vice presidents don't win elections, but vice presidents can lose elections. But some people will connect to one half of the ticket or the other half of the ticket. It's also to the extent that what our lieutenant governor candidates come to be people that contemplate running for governor later on, we get a chance to hold them in a little bit stronger light. If they're attached to the success of the governor's office, I think it's very difficult at the federal level to. If you're vice president of a very unsuccessful president, your political career in a lot of ways ends there. So I think I'm looking for the same type of thing where I'm doing it first and foremost because I think that there's upside to the citizens, that we get a better performance out of the executive branch. I think that there are certainly, the extent you've created a loophole that could be somebody could take advantage of, I think there's possibilities that are positive possibilities that don't exist today.
Right. And I guess the same sorts of things that go on nationally when a presidential candidate picks a vice president within their party, right, at the convention,
right.
They go, I mean, in the past, John F. Kennedy said, I'm going to win the South. I'm from Massachusetts. So they absolutely detested Lyndon Johnson, but they picked Lyndon Johnson because mm-hmm. he brought Texas and the South. Now in our political culture, probably we contemplate balance tickets of picking a female, of picking a minority, of picking. So in Missouri, under this system, if the voters approve what you're bringing forward, they would, I guess a governor would say, well, I'm from St. Louis. The senator from 15th is running for governor, and he goes, well, I'm from St. Louis. And beyond being the tallest member and the tallest person to ever set foot in the Capitol, that's not enough. And so he picks, so he goes, well, I need probably help in rural Missouri. And I guess what I'm getting at is you're comfortable with all those things because the protection would be that the voters
the voters get to weigh in. And then, again, I could, if the senator from the 15th, when he runs for governor, if he has the ability to select somebody, let's say, for example, he decides he wants to select the senator from the 18th because he wants to have a really, he wants his administration to really have a great sense of what goes on in the farm community. And then so he partners with the senator from the 18th and they successfully win election. And I would think that the citizens...
The senator from Polk.
The senator from... But the thing is, I think that is that...
He has that Andy Taylor quality from the Andy Griffith Show, and, you know, that would have a lot of appeal. We could just send him out to rural Missouri and...
I think that people connect with presidential candidates, vice presidential candidates. They feel like, you know, maybe this person doesn't understand me, but the other person on the ticket doesn't understand
me. Or, Senator, here's one more thing for comedic purpose. What if he picked the senator from Johnson, and the lieutenant governor could just go around the state and go, this is great!
I guess, so, look, I think the reason that I put the bill forward is I think that the citizens of Missouri, would, when they hear this idea, when I tell them, they go, well, look, that makes sense. That's how we do it at the federal level. We've always done it at the federal level.
Yeah, really don't have any – I honestly stood up just because I wanted to understand, and I'm still thinking about it, and I just wanted to actually talk to you about it because I don't have a serious problem with what you're proposing because that – we are removing away, we're removing one election.
Right.
We do sort of have a check per se on the governor with the lieutenant governor in our current system. Those are both from two different parties.
Yep.
But I'm not sure that the lieutenant governor's office has much of a check on the executive branch anyway in the current system. So I just wanted to get up and visit with you because I'm actually fairly open on the issue. So,
well, I appreciate
anyway.
That.
Plus, I also wanted to ridicule the senator from 15th. And the senator from Johnson, if possible. Thank you.
Further discussion. Senator from the 14th, what purpose do you rise?
Yes, Mr. President. I'd like to inquire of the senator from the 24th.
Senator, do you yield? He does. Proceed.
Thank you. I'm actually going to be against your bill. And one of the reasons is because, you know, I worked in the lieutenant governor's office for three or more years, and I don't think anyone else in this body actually worked in the lieutenant governor's office other than myself. And so I guess my first question to pose to you would be, what does the lieutenant governor do?
Right. Well, there's a long list of very specific duties that the lieutenant governor performs. Would you like, you worked in the office, so you're aware.
Just want to make sure you know.
Yeah, do you want me to read this for the benefit of everybody else here?
Just if you can, I would like to know what your brevity is of what the lieutenant governor's office does.
Right.
So.
And keep in mind that I'm not, and the duties of the Lieutenant Governor's office that are by law, okay, I'm not suggesting that any of those duties change. So, I mean, we could start with he serves as the President of the Senate. He operates the Office of Advocacy and Assistance for the Elderly.
Okay, so, everything basic. So let me get into a little bit of depth in what the Lieutenant Governor's office does. One, at least when I was a staffer for the Lieutenant Governor's office, there were about 16 boards and commissions, half of which dealing with economic development, the other half dealing with senior citizen advocacy or disability issues. And oftentimes, it is required that the Lieutenant Governor make decisions.
Sure.
For example, MDFB, the Missouri Development Finance Board, the Lieutenant Governor gets to make decisions on funding and bonding in the state of Missouri. If you look at MHDC, Missouri Housing Development Commission, the Lieutenant Governor also serves in a capacity making decisions on how funding is going to be appropriated throughout the state of Missouri when it comes to housing developments, low-income housing, mixed housing, the trust fund that MHDC has. I remember that in 2001, 2002, you had the Tobacco Securitization Commission. That was a commission where there were only three people who served on it, the governor, the lieutenant governor, and one other person who I'm forgetting about. So my problem in having this implemented would be that there would not be any independence of the lieutenant governor. And frankly, you know, the first female statewide office holder was Harriet Woods, who served in his body and is from my precinct. And I don't think that she would have gotten elected had there been a joint effort. I don't think that your candidate, the Republican candidate for governor, could win at this point. And I mean, that would be probably, that candidate would be a heavy burden on your current lieutenant governor. So I'm just trying to figure out, you know, what are the positives in this? Because coming from that position, working in the lieutenant governor's office, this does not give an independent voice to the people of Missouri. And I know there are a lot of folks who are mad that we have Jay Nixon, you know, as governor, but there's also balance that's offered when you have our lieutenant governor, who happens to be Republican, be in office. And that's what we've always been about in the state of Missouri, is balance. So I don't see how this bill would be beneficial to independent voters or to voters, period. And I don't know how taxpayers would be content in knowing that the lieutenant governor is probably just being, you know, the person who rubber stamps everything that the governor does.
Well, I appreciate your concern, and I mentioned before, there's the duties and obligations of the lieutenant governor would not change at all.
But there's a conflict, because the governor is also on MHDC.
Mm-hmm.
The governor is also on other boards and commissions, and between the two offices, they can talk about what they may or may not do, but I don't want the lieutenant governor to be beholden to what the governor wants. And that's where the independence is really important, because we're dealing with millions upon millions of dollars on MHDC, we're dealing with MDFB, we're dealing with disabilities, the senior advocate for the state. What if the lieutenant governor is the senior advocate of the state by statute? What if the person that the ideal candidate for governor on either side happens not to have a profound love and respect about senior issues? That's another conflict. I mean, then we look at the, and I'm just going on the top of my head, then we have the Community Service Commission. I mean, that's a decision-making authority that deals with funding. I have a distinct problem with this bill going forward, because it does not give any voters or taxpayers the independent voice that they need and deserve in government, in the executive branch. There's sometimes where our lieutenant governor completely disagrees with our governor. Our governor completely disagrees with our lieutenant governor. And that happened under Joe Maxwell and Governor Holden. They didn't always agree, but they independently had a voice on these boards and commissions. And I, again, as I stated, I don't think that the lieutenant governor, whoever that may be, should be the rubber stamp.
Well, I appreciate your concern, Senator. Surely on all the commissions of which you mentioned, there are far more members of those commissions than just the governor or lieutenant
governor. But do you know how that works, though? So the governor appoints people. The lieutenant governor has, at least, I don't know how it works now, but I know that the governor used to ask for suggestions from the lieutenant governor. Sometimes he did it, sometimes he wouldn't do it. And then sometimes, and I can tell you on a couple of those commissions, some of the people who are appointed to those boards and commissions have direct input on the election of the governor or lieutenant governor or the treasurer in some cases. Or the Attorney General. The Attorney General sits on MHDC. And I would not want there to be a rubber stamp on any of those. And those other members of some of those other commissions, you know, they may do just exactly what the Lieutenant Governor says to do because he was elected or she was elected statewide. Or they may do what the governor wants to do. I mean, I was there in those rooms when we were deciding, you know, whether or not the St. Louis baseball stadium should get funding from the state. I was there in those conversations. You know, I'm sure you knew people who were in that room who wanted bonding from MDFB. I can tell you I was in the room when we were discussing the old post office downtown and whether or not we should have public funding,
surely, our state dollars going into that.
Those
discussions will still go on. They'll still be open and transparent.
But there's no independence. There's not an independent voice in that. And that's what I used to do the briefings for the lieutenant governor.
3 senators standing. Senator from Cape Girardeau, may I ask why are you standing?
Thank you, Mr. President. I was wondering if I could request unanimous consent for introduction of special guests.
Seeing no objection, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. To your right, our left, just coming into the chamber are a bunch of homeschooled children that are up here visiting their state capital. I would like to introduce to the body Maddie and Braden Baker. Also, Kaylee and Jacob Suderman and Anna Dittmer and Krista Baker is their sponsor that brought them all up from Southeast Missouri. And I hope the Senate will help welcome them to their state capital.
That's great. Would the guests of the Senator from Cape Girardeau please stand up and wave, and let's recognize them and welcome them to the state capital. Thank you, guys. Senator from the 14th, proceed.
Thank you. So I'm just trying to figure out how is this independent voice going to happen. And here's the other thing. You know, the state of Missouri is quite fickle in these different elections that we have. And sometimes we may have a Republican president, and then all of a sudden in our statewide offices we have a bunch of Democrats that are elected, and vice versa. That always happens. I mean, the Missouri voters are very fickle, and they change their minds. I change my mind. You know that. You know, I don't always do a consistent ballot when I am at home and I'm voting. And so I don't know if a person like Harriet Woods could be elected if she had to run under the Democratic candidate against John Ashcroft. I don't see that happening. And so she was able to be the first female statewide office holder because of what she stood for and what she believed in. And I don't want a rubber stamp to be in that office. I mean, seriously, the work that's done in it, people play the lieutenant governor's office as not being very important. You know, when I was a staffer, our lieutenant governor was always in that chair. He'd never left that chair unless there was a board or a commission. And that was just the status quo. And he, at that point, decided what we were going to talk about. We had a more engaged lieutenant governor at that time. you know, and that's the example that I recall. And I don't know if there's a rubber stamp from the governor's office if they're going to be committed. I mean, this works just as well for you as it does for me, regardless of who is in that, on the second floor or who's on the first floor. The lieutenant governor's office actually used to be in 121 back then, and then in the basement. But I don't see this as being beneficial for anyone.
Okay, well, we differ in this opinion. I think what I'm looking for are ways to increase the public's understanding of what the executive branch is trying to
do. They don't understand it now. If they don't understand what the lieutenant governor's office does now, what is going to help them to better understand the relationship between the governor and the lieutenant governor? What the lieutenant governor does is different in many ways than what the governor does. And in many respects is helpful. So let me tell you, or hurtful. So let me give you a good example. When we had Matt Blunt as the governor and our current lieutenant governor, you know what happened? The one commission that dealt with the minority needs of African Americans and all the other minority groups, they never even met. That's what happened under your lieutenant governor with the Republican governor. They never met to talk about the health needs of minority individuals in the state of Missouri. And then all of a sudden last year, there's a whole list of commissions and committees and boards to get rid of. And one of those happens to be the minority, it's a long name, but whatever the name of this commission is, one of the commissions that was on the chopping block happens to be one of those committees that was under the authority of the lieutenant governor. And if you know, that looks like a rubber stamp to me in many ways. If a lieutenant governor is unwilling to meet with older minority individuals in the state, I would much rather have a lieutenant governor that is engaged and cares about the efforts of minority individuals. So the job of the lieutenant governor is by far different, and one of the lowest paid offices in statewide government. It's one of the lowest state.
Well, Senator, I didn't bring this bill forward for purposes of financial consideration.
What other senators have said.
My anticipation would be, though, that you would have, you instead of having completely separate staffs, you'd have combined, you know, you would be part of the administration. The lieutenant governor would be part of the administration like his other, the governor's other appointments. And to your point earlier about when you suggested that citizens of Missouri don't even know what the lieutenant governor does.
Yeah, most don't.
Okay, well, I think that's sad.
It is sad, and so I don't know how your bill is going to actually
be
any different.
Well, I think that we've had the system we've had for a long period of time, and at the end of that long period of time, using your words, people, the citizens of Missouri, don't know what the lieutenant governor does.
It's unfortunate. In my community, they do, because they were fortunate to have an independent voice that actually won, the first woman to be elected to a statewide office from my precinct. They know what a lieutenant governor does.
I didn't have a chance to meet Lieutenant Governor
Woods. They know that lieutenant governor was responsible for the circuit breaker, too, from my community.
Well, I hadn't had the pleasure of meeting that lieutenant governor. I would suggest to you, though, that it might very well be the case that if my bill were to become the law of the land, you'd probably see you would see it on a much more consistent basis. You'd have women on that ticket. You'd have minorities on that ticket.
We have women on the ticket now. We got four women running, maybe five now, running for lieutenant governor. That's great.
I think you'd see women hold that office to a much greater degree. Not to mention, the other way around. I think when we get our first female governor, it's very likely that person might choose to have a male on the ticket. To the extent that we have not had minority representation in either of these offices, I think that
doesn't resolve what my concerns are.
Well,
my concerns are valid, first of all, because I'm the only one in this body who's ever even served in a lieutenant governor's office,
number one.
And I did that for 3 years.
Well,
and so, you know, I take it kind of as an affront for someone who's never even worked in the office.
Well, that's fine. I'm not taking away the duties and responsibilities of the lieutenant governor's office.
But do you understand the conflict in having an independent voice on these boards and commissions? I think there are 20 boards and commissions now that the lieutenant governor serves on. Unfortunately, when I was in the House, there was some bill that said that the lieutenant governor can send a designee to do their work. I think that's pitiful. In that case, if the lieutenant governor is giving all of their work and responsibilities to a designee, a designee for all of these boards and commissions that oversee millions and millions of dollars, then in fact we don't need a lieutenant governor's office. But the fact is that we are not utilizing the office as we should right now, at least from what I recall, having a lieutenant governor who's always on that in that chair consistently and having an independent voice. There were times where the governor and lieutenant governor disagreed with one another. And it was important to have that independent voice. There were times where they worked well together.
So you could,
but you never know
you
what can happen. We're making assumptions, and
governor,
it's not good to make assumptions.
If a governor runs for re-election and he or she has made a very poor decision with respect to their first lieutenant governor that they chose, that they would be held accountable in that re-election.
Yeah, but we're not hiring a president and a vice president here. This is the state of Missouri, and there's an obvious independent voice that we have in the state because we can go blue, we can go red in any given election. That's what we've done.
Oh, but clearly we've modeled ourselves after the three branches of government. That's what, I mean, to say a governor, lieutenant governor is modeled after president and vice president, clearly that speaks the truth.
Well, but does it really work? And people talk about Biden. They talked about the former vice president shooting people and such. I mean,
well, I'm not sure about that, Senator, but I would tell you that there's only 18 states that do it the way we do it, and all the other
states,
there's
seven
states
that don't. I mean, we do what's
best for
our state. That's
not about half.
So there are 50 states, am I correct?
And 18 is not about half.
Yeah, it's almost half. It's at least a third.
Okay. Senator,
we only need seven more states.
What I'm hearing from you is
we could nitpick, but we're clearly on one half of the spectrum. We're not like in the middle. We're on one half of the spectrum of people who have this in place already. So I'm just saying that it's clear to me that you don't understand the full extent of what the responsibilities are for the lieutenant governor.
Well, I take exception to that, because I do understand the full extent.
Please tell me, because I worked in it for 3 years.
Well, that's fine.
And I'd like you to bring up something that I don't know, and I've not heard anything.
It's not a question of what you know, what you know, or what I don't know.
It is a question of what you know, because you're bringing this bill up. And you need to know everything in order to pass it. I'm not feeling comfortable in passing this bill because obviously you don't know the independent voice that is involved in having a lieutenant governor who is elected independently from the governor. I think that's very important. I think it's almost limiting. It is limiting to the voice of the people. It forces them to, look at your own race for governor and lieutenant governor.
If this gets to the ballot, we'll find out.
You're a candidate for lieutenant governor can win.
I'm not changing the
law. But your candidate for governor will not be winning this year.
Let's let the people weigh on this. This goes to the ballot. This changes Missouri's constitution. The people of Missouri.
The people did decide this a long time ago. And I don't see why. I think the senator from the third was absolutely correct. This is setting a huge change in what our statutes say. I mean, this is a huge change.
It's not a change. We're changing the Constitution. And that's where, in order to
do
that,
it requires...
Yeah, but
I don't agree with this change.
Well, then let the people of Missouri weigh in.
No, I'm not going to let the people, because I'm going to keep talking on this, Senator. Mr. President.
Senator from the 14th.
I'd like to inquire of the Senator from the 11th.
Senator from the 11th.
Yes, I yield.
Do you yield? He does
yield. Mr. President. Thanks for your prompt recognition.
Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator, did you hear any of the conversation that I had with the senator from the 24th?
I did.
And do you understand the conflict that I'm having in letting this bill go forward? I mean, one is the independent voice, which is really important when it comes to boards and commissions.
I asked the senator from 24th, and I tend to not disagree with him that I don't know in the current system what the lieutenant governor has right now. I am aware of what you said, what you did there, and I'm sure what other occupants of that office have been, but I'm talking about entirely structurally as an office, how much of a check they are on the executive branch now. And part of it, We currently have a system where the governor is of one party and the lieutenant governor is of another party. So beyond reading occasionally differing opinions in the press over Tour, Missouri, or some other dispute that may be actual, may be budgetary, may be genuine, may be partisan, or any combination of those things. I don't know how much in the current system of the lieutenant governor in our system is a check on the governor. It looks to me like most of the power still resides with the governor. Now, the issue that I talked to him about was other states do it this way, okay, to be fair. Other states handle it in this way or have some variation of this where they run as a ticket. And the obvious example is we have a federal system that does that, as you well know. So, you know, the question becomes, I don't know how much, I heard your inquiry, I don't know how much of a, I am aware of the functions of the Lieutenant Governor's office. I don't know how much that is an actual check on the executive branch's power. My concern that I expressed to him was, I'm always concerned that in a check and balance system, the primary check on the governor, on the executive branch's power in any system is the legislature and judiciary, primarily. And, you know, I don't know in that mix how much the lieutenant governor is a check on the executive branch in Missouri.
The lieutenant governor's office is the only one that is both in the executive branch and the legislative branch. Let's just start there. Knowing that we are part of the legislative branch, it's very important to have an independent voice, especially when it comes to our taxpayer dollars. And as I stated earlier, I think that we are getting into a very bad area when we have a rubber stamp as the lieutenant governor, especially when he or she is responsible for millions upon millions of dollars that go everywhere in the state. I believe,
Senator, one thing on your point you just made. Keep in mind the other thing that I didn't really go over with the senator from 24th. In our system, the lieutenant governor presides over this body, presides over the Senate, like in the national system. Now, this problem could be true of the federal system, I guess, but you've got a presiding officer presiding over a Senate that, let's say, for example, might be of the other party. Okay? Let's assume that the current governor and his appointee became governor and lieutenant governor at the last election. And like now, it was a divided, at least as far as partisan, government. You would have a lieutenant governor who is selected by the current governor presiding over us. Now, in the history of Missouri, there are, in the annals, have been cases where in the 60s, the lieutenant governor was, you know, removed from the chain. I mean, so just one thing to think about is, one of the functions that we haven't, that just thinking about this, he or she would preside over a body in which that happened. Now, in 2004, my first year, the lieutenant governor was of the other party. The last day of session, the very last day of session, there was a bill that would have greatly changed the Medicaid program in Missouri. It later was passed under Governor Blunt and the legislature in 2005, but that was its first inception. Okay, the last day of session, the lieutenant governor was presiding over the body. In his interpretation of the rules, our rules would not recognize someone with a previous question motion. Senator Shields had got up several times and attempted to offer the previous question on the Medicaid bill. The lieutenant governor at the time, who happened to be of the other party, it was Joe Maxwell, I could say his name, did not recognize him because in his reading of the rules, he could not interrupt two senators debating.
Joe Maxwell now, wasn't the lieutenant governor in 2005.
I'm sorry?
He wasn't the lieutenant governor in 2005.
I said four.
Four, yeah.
My first year was his last year. Mm-hmm. And his last day of presiding over this body, and the point is, I wouldn't get hung up on the year. The point is, you have a system where you had a legislature of the other party presided by, and that could happen now, I mean by election, but now you've added that the governor is picking this person, which would imply that the governor at the second floor would have much more influence over the lieutenant governor than the status quo allows.
Yes,
because
exactly.
The status quo, they run independently, it can be a person of another party. So now you have that person presiding over the Senate, okay? And I'm saying even in the status quo, there's, you know, this body has examples of where there have been great legal constitutional disputes between this body and the presiding officer. In the 60s, there was lieutenant governor and that. My first year here, I mean, this was very educational that the presiding officer, who was lieutenant governor in 2004, in his interpretation of the rules, would not that. Now, the good news for those people on Medicaid is they didn't do the cuts. But as far as procedurally, I won't mention names, but I asked several people who've served in this body for a long time as senators, and they just said the lieutenant governor was wrong. I mean, a privilege motion is exactly that.
Well, we went through that last week where you made a clarification to the chair that when I asked for us to go into delay or recess or whatever, it was a privileged motion. I'm not saying it correctly. But you had to correct the chair because it was a privileged motion that I was requesting.
It wasn't. You asked for unanimous consent,
yeah,
of which he had no voice. Okay.
But
so
he started asking
if somebody had
why.
A problem, like if our current majority floor leader or anyone in this chamber had a problem with it, the immediate remedy was to say, I object.
Yes,
and then it's
exactly.
No longer unanimous consent.
Exactly.
It was not up to the presiding officer to direct for what purpose.
Yeah, but that's what he did. He asked for what purpose. And being new,
I got 25 days left.
I'm glad that you were there.
This is the part. This is
the
part where I'll just tell you that you were in the House, you were in the Senate last year. This is the part of session where the last 5-6 weeks, everybody just needs to stay calm and try to maintain a sense of humor and get through all this.
Well, I think we laughed.
But this is the part of the session where everybody starts losing it. And it really starts next 2 weeks from now. The senator from Johnson, for example, has already gotten cranky, which that's very unusual that he would get cranky, and has started using derogatory ornithological references to refer to me.
And then he starts wearing red.
What's that?
And then he starts wearing a lot of red on the floor.
Well, that's earlier. That's the February senator from Johnson or something. I don't know if it's tied to a basketball season or something. Something involving mules. But anyway, no, Senator, I don't want to dwell upon. Look, everybody in this chamber makes mistakes. Everybody in this chamber loses their temper. Everybody in this chamber says stupid things. That just happens. What I want to get to is keep in mind with this, you're going to have. And this, to be fair to the center from 24th, can happen in the status quo. But back to my point with him, what's the potential that the lieutenant governor is now the governor, regardless of who the governor is, lackey?
It's a high potential.
I mean, right now in the federal system, nobody really views the vice president as independent.
No.
They're viewed as there to go campaign for the president. Our current vice president is on a plane right now campaigning somewhere for the president for the upcoming election. That's one of their functions. Preside over the Senate and handle the reelection campaign. The other part's left out of the Constitution, but that's sort of just implied.
And I hope that the lieutenant governor, under the system that the senator from the 24th is proposing, would not be that rubber stamp or that lackey. And it seems as though, in my opinion, and in the opinion of a person who's actually worked in the lieutenant governor's office, is that the lieutenant governor would become the lackey and the rubber stamp of the governor.
Well, the only the point in his favor is that could happen now. The point in your favor is, and where I kind of am starting to look at this is, and what I talked to him about was, it would appear to be more likely under what we're going to post-2016. You can have a lieutenant governor right now that's politically aligned to the current governor, but they're elected independently, and whether this is good or bad in our system, most politicians are pretty selfish and self-oriented, and they are concerned about their own re-election. And they might have alliances and everything, but guess what always comes first? Their re-election or their election. So that could happen now, but now you're going to a system, a couple things to contemplate in all this, before we go rushing about changing the Constitution and bringing it to the voters, you're going to have somebody who is potentially more likely to be a lackey or appointee or political appointee there by the good graces of the governor, and it's highly unlikely that the office of governor is going to pick somebody who's going to be an independent critic. You know, Abraham Lincoln isn't alive anymore. You know, Abraham Lincoln had a cabinet made up of everybody who ran against him, if you can imagine that. But it was, you know, it worked for Lincoln. But not everybody's built like Abraham Lincoln. So you're likely in our modern political culture going to have the lieutenant governor selected for demographic, for political reasons, for and part of that is going to imply a sense of political loyalty, obedience.
Can I say one thing? It's putting all the power into one person's hands.
Yeah, I mean, you're not. The current system has. If you're a member of the Republican Party right now, and you don't like something the governor is doing, what often happens is the lieutenant governor in the system takes on the shadow government, to use a term from a parliamentary government, a shadow government that they kind of imply, well, this is how things would be running. It doesn't always work this way, but the lieutenant governor is sort of sometimes seen as the person who's going to be the governor, gubernatorial candidate of that. Now, it's not written down anywhere. There are examples of where it hasn't happened, but typically the lieutenant governor is seen as the critical voice, particularly almost always if they're of the other party, to be critical of some action of the governor. When I've been here, in 2009, there was a issue in the budget over Tour Missouri, the bike race. And that was a huge dispute between the governor and lieutenant governor, which happened, by the way, largely because they were members of different political parties and had different things. So, you know, keep in mind, there is that check now.
Well, here's my
If the governor is now in his system, you will not have the lieutenant governor in his system ever be a critic of the governor again publicly. Or I would guess, and I don't know how he has the governor dispose of the lieutenant governor if they don't like him, but it's highly unlikely that you will ever see in Missouri the lieutenant governor. You'll still have the treasurer, you'll still have the AG, you'll still have the Secretary of State be critical of the governor if they're ever another party, but you are removing a critic who in history has been and often is the shadow government.
Yeah, here's my other issue. Well, let's say there's something wrong with the governor and the governor ends up getting into some ethical, messy situations where he or she would have to resign. Would the lieutenant governor have to resign too? Or what if the governor, God forbid, was, you know, let's say what happened to Governor Carnahan in an accident. And then you have this lackey who becomes the governor. So you have a lackey who becomes a rubber stamp, who becomes the governor at that point. I mean, I wouldn't have any respect for that person because they didn't earn that position.
Senator, actually, to be fair to this whole discussion, in the federal system that's happened. The senator from the 4th came bounding over here, and he once again tried to play historical beat the band, right?
where he tried to, you know, stump the band. And he goes, who's the only person in American history who was never elected to the office of vice president or president? The answer is Gerald Ford. So what I mean is, to be fair to the Senator from 24th, in the federal system, that's happened. Gerald Ford was not elected to be vice president. He was not elected to be president. And by the way, I answered that fairly immediately, which, of course, caused this grim look on the Senator from 4th's face because he thought he had stumped the band once again, which he tries almost on a weekly basis. But that's what he, but no. So in the federal system, you've had a person who has never been elected by, never elected vice president or president. If Harry Truman had lost in 1948, there are other examples where you would have had a number of people who would have only have been elected vice president.
Well, Senator, here's my point. We're not the federal government. We're the state of Missouri. And we're talking about the people who live in the state of Missouri. We're not talking about federal government here.
Well, to be fair, we are talking about a system, and you've got to look at, I mean, we're a state government. There are states that operate this way, you know, and all that. So to be fair, you've got to look at this and say, you know, you're talking about a system. There is no such thing as this ideal form of doing things, right? I've never found this thing where when we go through these statutes, we say, oh, this state has found the perfect solution to all our problems, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It just varies with opinions and circumstances.
Well, like I said, I believe, and it's been stated on the floor before, by letting this pass, it allows one person to have all the power, and that's unfair.
Yeah, I don't know that my level of, you know, I go through this all the time. I don't know if I'm a yes. I don't know if I'm a no. I don't know that I have the passion to say, you know, I told the Senator from 24th, I'm not, you know, don't have, you know, the protection is you're going to the voters, and the voters change their constitution all the time. And they change their statute book all the time.
But is this out of convenience? I mean, I'm starting to think if this is political or not. You know, maybe our current lieutenant governor wants this. Maybe there's a letter or an email that I haven't seen. Maybe this is, you know, all in effort to make sure that the other party has their own candidates all the time. I mean, I could tell you that their candidate for governor right now isn't going to win. And I think that would be if they were joined with the current
Who's candidate? Governor. I'm sorry, candidate for what?
For governor. The Spence
what party?
Guy. The Spence guy. Well, he would.
Well, don't they have a primary, though.
Yeah, I know, but I'm saying if this were instituted now, you know, he would have no chance of winning. So in that scenario, you know, our governor can pick one of our six or seven candidates by now for lieutenant governor, you know. But here's
well,
the thing.
My,
I believe
my
that
concern
they should be
about the,
elected independently.
My concern about the bill is just that while this happens in the status quo, to be fair, while there's no perfect system, that I don't know that we're not making it easier to turn a position that's constitutionally viewed as the second in command and ceding that authority to the executive branch that already has tremendous power, and then at a second level that we as a Senate are ceding who's going to be our presiding officer to being up to the whim of the governor.
But here's what I'm saying. If you are in war and you have your chief commander who is responsible for doing all of the logistics, all of the strategy, and there was a deputy commander of the Army, or whatever you call these individuals, would you have an appointed person who's never been in war or who's never, you know, fought or killed someone or has never done any strategy? Would you feel comfortable as a U.S. citizen having some appointed person be responsible for all of our armed forces in a war? I would say no. And basically that's what we're doing by allowing this bill to go forward. It's saying that someone who does not have the credentials or the background or perhaps even the love for these responsibilities and duties is all of a sudden going to be appointed, and if something happens to the governor, God forbid, you know, we have this lackey who's in that position. We wouldn't do that in war, so why are we doing that here?
Well, the answer is that there's examples of where that happens now. The president, when he gets his nomination, his party, really the only scrutiny he gets is his or her electability. And, you know, there's been examples in both parties where people have picked a vice president that probably has helped cost them the election. So they've got to have that factor. So the answer to your question is there's probably examples of both. The military is a command structure that's, we're talking about a democracy, and that's, a military is a command structure that's not a democracy. So I'm just saying there's examples of...
But there's an interview process, and our elections are called the interview process. And when you go up in the ranks and you're in the military, it's based on what your ability is. I mean, our ability is to win. If we win, we're there. If we understand the issues, we're there. But if we don't know the issues and we've not been there before, you know, that would put me into a, you know, a really bad situation. Right now, look at our, which position is it? We have a position right now where there's a person who's never been elected before and who is doing things, our auditor, who's doing things completely different than any auditor, Republican or Democrat, has done. And there are a lot of eyes that are rolling in how our state auditor is doing certain things. There's a question. There's a cloud above his head on both sides of the aisle. And I'm just saying, when you go into a position, you know, that's one of the problems that we have with term limits, too, is that you get people who are from the outside and don't understand the institutional information that we have. And for some people, you know, that is difficult, and there's a barrier. There are things that you have to learn. Now, I'm just saying, for an office like that, that is so important, not only in economic development, but for senior citizens and those who have disabilities, you know, I'd rather that person have a background in something and not be a rubber stamp. I mean, that person may be appointed because they were just great at constituency services. That person may be appointed because they gave the most money. You know, I don't know how that person's going to be appointed or on what qualifications is that person appointed outside of what is already in statute. That's what I'm nervous about, Senator.
Well, the comparable would be, I get back to, there are all sorts of faults and problems in the current system, unquestionably. I'm not sure that they are because of our structure or our system. So this is kind of one of these things where I'm like, when I read this bill, I went, why? I mean, what are we pursuing to remedy other than it's different than the status quo? And then you could take it to another level. You could say, well, maybe it makes sense to do away with the Office of Attorney General and just have, just like the federal system, and have the governor appoint them. And the same arguments that the sponsor makes would probably have a tough time making, you know, would be contradictory of what the reason for doing this. I mean, so it gets back to the point, which is that the federal system is the federal system for a reason. It has all sorts of different challenges. Missouri really doesn't have to deal with national security issues, defense issues. We don't run NORAD. I mean, we have an able National Guard. We're part of that system, but we don't have, the Republic of Missouri does not have a, you know, diplomatic ties with where we represent that. I mean, that's our national government. The federal system is different than a state. So in response to those differences, in Missouri, as in most states, we elect an attorney general. And the reason, probably, I would guess, is that the people of the states, for the most part, have decided we don't want too much power concentrated in the executive branch. But one could make an argument, well, if the federal system does this, why don't we just have the governor pick the attorney general?
And I would assume some of the same proposed advantages of this you could postulate and say were advantageous for the governor just picking the attorney general. I would not want
to
live.
I would say,
Senator, I would not want to live in a state where the governor picks the attorney general, because I'm guessing they're going to pick somebody who's going to be not very independent.
Or any other office, for that matter. I mean, what kind of state would it be if the governor was appointing, you know, every single statewide office holder other than himself or herself? I mean, that would be a bad disposition for the state. And that would leave us as individuals voiceless. That means that our independent voice, our vote, does not matter. And that's when I really, really have a problem, because I want those individuals in my district who are too poor to give a $100,000 check or be one of the Humphreys or any one of the other H's. Their vote counts just as much as everybody else's vote. And they don't have the money to say, hey, listen, I want you to put such and such on your panel of judges, or I want you to put such and such on the list for lieutenant governor or attorney general. You know, right now all we have to look at is, you know, some of the COFRs, some of the $100,000 checks that have come down in the last month. I mean, just look at that. I mean, are one of those Humphreys or one of the other H's, are they going to buy the appointee for lieutenant governor? Because that's what's happening right now. Is Rex Sinfield going to buy the appointee for lieutenant governor? He's already buying legislation, so I'm trying to figure out, is he going to buy judges if we change that process? Is he going to buy the statewide offices?
I think the issue you're stating is you're concerned about special interest buying things.
Yeah, because rather than an individual's name. Yeah, I want my Mrs. Johnson's, and I want my poor African American and poor old individuals in my district to have a voice, and I want each one of their votes to count individually. And when we put these two offices together, that means that their vote, their voice, means nothing. It means nothing. And I am not going to allow for us to move forward, and my constituents do not have the opportunity to express their voice through their vote. And it not matter, because that's what this bill is doing. It's taking away the voice of individual people. Because you may like the candidate for governor, but you don't like the candidate for lieutenant governor. I can tell you, and it's fact, I didn't like the candidate for attorney general. Everybody knows that. So there's someone else who I supported, obviously. But if that position was an appointment by the governor, yeah, I wouldn't be able to have that voice. I wouldn't be able to educate my constituents on why I supported someone other than the Democratic candidate at the time. I want them to be proud of their vote, whatever that may be. And I don't want it to be dictated to them who one of their elected officers is going to be, statewide officers.
Well, I think before we submit things to voters, again, if voters are deciding, I don't have this desire to say, as you, to, oh, I'm going to stop this bill at this point in the legislative process, but that's your
business. You know what, this is the same thing as SJR 29, reducing the number of months that we're in session. That doesn't make any sense either. And then
well,
we're going
but,
to
but
this,
Senator,
this doesn't
but
make
Senator,
sense.
I had, excuse me. What I decide to do at some level is I have a responsibility as minority leader, but if I have strong feelings, I express those just as you do. What I'm trying to tell you is just because I had stronger feelings about one, I don't have as other. I mean, so that's up to each individual senator to make that determination.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
And so I don't want you to be implying that because I stopped his other SJR that I have some obligation to stop every SJR.
I don't remember who.
I guess what I'm
that.
Saying is I might vote no and be against this idea. I would kind of want to see. I would, but that's different than I don't even want the idea to come to a vote. And I don't know.
what I would have to see to sort of make a determination is, which I haven't really at this point seen, is why are we doing this and what is the compelling advantage to doing all this? And I don't see the compelling advantage of changing. Now, you know, maybe I'm missing something. Some states do it. Okay, do they run more efficiently? Do they save money? Does everybody get along in that state? Does the sun shine 360 days of the year and it rains only on Tuesdays, 5 days of the year? I mean, what are the advantages that would make this before we, you know, changing the Constitution to me remains kind of a big deal. And
you're right. There should be an argument. There should be a justification.
There has to be also a compelling argument to, you know, look, we live in a time where we have to put up with this. When I say put up with this, we have to put up with statutory changes all the time that are put on the ballot by some interest group. We have to put up with constitutional changes that have to be done all the time. That are done all the time by some interest goes out and gets petitions and changes the Constitution. I think it's a terrible process that we have in the status quo. I think it's way too easy to get something on the ballot. And by the way, I think I'm right. The Missouri Constitution now has 163,000 words or something, and the federal Constitution has, I mean, I'm just saying our Constitution is so packed with everything from gaming votes to loss limits to da-da-da-da-da-da-da to, I mean, and it's all this product of the ease by which that, by the way, they, in distinction to the federal government, it's not easy to change the federal Constitution for a reason. You know, they have to go to all the state. I mean, they did that when term limits for president or term limits for presidents. I mean, they've had to prohibition, all those undoing prohibition. It's not easy to do that. And I will just tell you, you have to factor that climate in, that it's way too easy to change Missouri's constitution right now, in my opinion. And in that environment, I don't know that, I heard the Senator from 24th, I heard his presentation of the bill, I just haven't heard at this point anything compelling to indicate we really need to do this because.
And I haven't heard it either, which for me is the reason why we need to continue questioning. I mean, seriously, if there's not a compelling interest, why are we moving ahead? I mean, why are we doing this? I mean, it's one thing to make a difference in individual people's lives. I know that the budget is coming up, and that's really important to a lot of people. We are dealing with education matters, and we have a bunch of our NEA members who are here. And there are all these other issues that are important and vital. We have to have these conversations about how much we're spending and where money goes. I want to talk about tax credit reform, but we're currently talking about an SJR that pretty much isn't going to change anything except an individual's voice through their vote and their vote not mattering. So, I mean, my question again remains, why are we doing this and why are we spending this much time on something unless it's political? I'd like to know how much politics is involved in this, because if there's no compelling evidence or information that we're given, you know, like, you know, let's just say the lieutenant governor did some bad stuff, you know, and we don't want lieutenant governor to do certain things. Unless that comes up, I don't know why we are moving forward with this bill. Because the voters have an opportunity to determine who they want to be in that position. They decide that, not one person. And I'm quoting when I keep saying, you know, let's not put the power of one or the power in one person's hands. I'm quoting the senator from the 24th. That's what he said in another bill. Let's not put the power all in one person's hands. I'm saying that now using the same rationalization.
I don't know that it's political. I think some people.
But we don't even know.
Well, what I mean, well, I, I'm just, I don't. necessarily view it as some political calculation. It may very well be. People become, there's a lot of people I've served with over the years that become very frustrated with government. And they think that if we adopt this principle from the business community or from this da-da-da-da-da, and I don't know if this is a case of that, but I will relate to the number of days. The number of days is not going to solve whatever illnesses affect the legislative process, because part of the illnesses that affect of the legislative process are by design supposed to be there. Which what I mean is you don't want to pass a bill quickly.
You don't.
The whole function of a Senate is to slow things down, and that's how that works. Now if we were running a company motivated by making profit or bringing things to stockholders or, you know, keeping the, we would come from a different discipline and a different outlook. You wouldn't have a Senate in charge of a corporation, right? That wouldn't make sense. Government, I always like to tell people, is in the business of things that no other business wants to do, because you really can't make money running a fire department. You really can't make money running a police department. You really, for the most part, unless you're a provider, can't make money from giving people, poor people, health care. Government gets left with all the responsibilities that people can't make profit from. So sometimes when you come in and say, well, when you talk words of efficiency or business-like or whatever, I take a little bit of pause, because government's over a whole category of things that are not, that while you certainly want executive departments or departments of the state to operate in a business-like fashion, you want them to be as efficient as possible, so much of government is we're conducting things that are not profitable. And that's why we're the last thing, you know? Some governments run a trash service, some is left a private thing, because some people can make money. There's huge trash companies that make money from that function. I mean, it varies from thing to thing, but fire department, police department, outside being a weapons manufacturer, the industrial military complex, being a superpower, taking care of poor people, taking care of the infirmed, blah, 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 blah. Those are all things that government's sort of left with, because the private sector really doesn't respond to it beyond charity.
That's exactly right.
So we get back to the point of, I don't know, sometimes I don't think it's less political. I think sometimes people think that they could somehow make this whole thing more efficient. And part of its inefficiency or apparent inefficiency is democracy of affording people the right to have their say, which you wouldn't have in the corporate world. You wouldn't have in the business world.
But we do in this setting.
I mean, if I have my own company, I can pretty much, for the most part, if I have stockholders, I have the motivation of making sure that whatever I'm doing responds to their interests financially, and I can probably get it done. I do have to report to that, but it's not the same as in government or politics, where you're reporting to everybody. And at some level, everybody has a say. So when people talk about the inefficiency sometimes of politics, it's by design supposed to be inefficient at some level. The most efficient form of government on earth is a dictatorship.
Well, I think the whole purpose of that is trying to create the best services for people. That's why it's so difficult, because we're trying to create services for people and what they need. Part of what the lieutenant governor does is to determine what services we're going to have for people. I recall when I was a staffer for the lieutenant governor and we were dealing with tobacco securitization, that's millions upon millions of dollars entering our state. That's something that needed to be addressed for people to deter them from smoking and a whole bunch of other things. MDFB, I remember funding for the Guadalupe Center. You know, that was an important concern in Kansas City. The old post office downtown, as I stated before. The baseball stadium in St. Louis, that was an issue. The Chiefs, I mean, I can go on and on and on, in what the lieutenant governor does to help allocate dollars to people who are in need. I remember, in fact, being a staffer to the lieutenant governor, and we were reconfiguring the maps for who is getting funding in the state. And there was a big offset because St. Louis City was getting more in resources than St. Louis County, and then rural Missouri wasn't getting adequate funding at that time. So what we decided to do is to change the map and have different regions so there could be a better allocation of funds from MHDC. And so if you don't have a lieutenant governor who's independent, forethinking, and part of the process, and who's basically a rubber stamp or a lackey of the governor, they're not going to have the independence to figure out what is the best policy to move on. And that's why it is so important for a lieutenant governor to be elected independently from the governor.
Senator, if I might suggest, I would, I might vote yes, I might vote no. I don't know if my concerns rise to the same level as yours. We might agree, but I don't know that I'm going to do that. If I would recommend to you the senator from Lawrence, you might talk to him about what his wishes are on the bill, and you might inquire of him and see where we go. We might be at a point where maybe you can sit down with the senator from 24th. I don't know. And what I'm saying is, I don't know. I'm sure that the gallery and the Senate is just riveted by every word I say. But I don't. You know, I always like to remind people we're not on C-SPAN, thank goodness, and no one really cares. And this is like performing in a drained swimming pool. But I would. You might. You know, the senator from 23rd isn't here today. I would check with the majority floor leader, maybe see where he wants to go. Maybe we're at a pause stage to where you can sit down with the senator from 24th, go over this or whatever. And that's what I'd recommend to you. You'll still retain the floor, so I'm not trying to, trick you. I'm happy to talk about it, but I just think maybe they want to move to something else. I don't know.
Well, I don't see the senator from the 24th, so I don't know what he...
Well, I was talking about maybe inquiring of the senator from either him or the senator from Lawrence. If it were me, I would inquire maybe of the senator from Lawrence and see, look, we're at sort of some sort of impasse because of your concerns and what he wants to do, and then you could inquire of the senator from 24th and see what he wants to do. Okay. I just have a feeling from you standing up that the bill is not going to pass in the next 10 minutes. So, you know what I mean? So I would
understand what you're saying. I'm trying to figure out why. I completely understand what you're saying, and I'm trying to figure out why, but I'll go ahead and go through that. But I'm not comfortable with this bill, and I think that we have not seen or heard any of the evidence that is needed to move along.
I'm not suggesting that you let the bill go. I am suggesting that you might inquire of the majority floor leader, see what his intent is on the bill.
I got that.
And then the senator from the 24th and see what their intent is. And if they say, we're going to be here till 10 o'clock tonight, then you have your answer. And I'll still be here and all that. But I don't see that. I don't sense that the Senate wants to be here till 10 o'clock tonight. I would certainly counsel against that over this bill. And perhaps, without it being on the floor, you can go over some of the issues with the Senator from 24th and see if you can come up with something.
Well, we're going to have a conversation, but I think I'm reading between your lines, and I'll go ahead and do that, and I'm not making any commitments.
I don't want you, Senator, you're inquiring me, I don't want you to lose the floor. What I'm suggesting is the conductor of the railroad is here. One of the trains is stuck on the tracks. You've got the guy in charge of the train that's stuck on the tracks, just walked in. You've got the conductor. So, you know, I'm happy to stand here and visit about the train that is stuck on the tracks. But for your purposes, you might want to inquire of the majority floor leader, see what his intent is on this bill. If this rises to the most important legislative initiative of his career, then you have your answer. It, however, might have been a bill that was just there on the calendar. With all due respect to the Senator from 24th, I'm sure he put a lot of work into it, but I don't know that we're going to get any successful conclusion before 6 o'clock tonight, when I'm not suggesting this to anybody. I would ideally like to be out of here on a Tuesday night, but we don't, you know, that's just my suggestion. But I'm giving you a pathway to that. I'm not leaving, and you have concerns about this bill, and, you know, you elected me, you're minority leader, so I will make sure that my members are addressed.
I've been putting on my
I will make sure that the issue that the issues of one of my members is addressed
the,
or tried to be
The one thing that I've been putting on my Facebook is that you have been quite helpful to me on this floor. So I appreciate that, Senator.
So I'm not telling you what to do, but if it were me, I would inquire the conductor, and the conductor maybe or you can have a conversation with the train that's stuck. And then we open up these lines, and, you know, I will tell you before I leave, sometimes I help that. I have told people many this. I used to tell the Senator from 3rd this all the time. I try to help with this railroad, but if you're familiar with the movie, of course there has to be a movie reference with an inquiry of me, Bridge Over the River Kwai. I often feel like Alec Guinness, you know, in the Japanese prisoner of war camp, helping the Japanese build the railroad. I just feel like sometimes maybe I shouldn't be helping him, but I think we have to move. You know, I don't think that you're going to just let this bill go because you have feelings about the bill, and I would just communicate that to the people in charge.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to inquire of the Senator from Lawrence.
Does the Senator from Lawrence yield for inquiry?
I do.
He yields. You may inquire.
Thank you, Senator. I'm just following the suggestion of our minority leader and trying to figure out what your level of importance is on this bill.
Well, my plan coming in this afternoon was to work through Senate bills for perfection on the formal calendar. Haven't gotten terribly far down that calendar. I think it's probably fair to assess that not every bill on the calendar is a top priority for all of us. However, it also, you know, the flip side of that is blocking every bill on the calendar in order for the place to move maybe can't always be the top priority for everybody either. My thought at this point would be you've made your reservations about the bill abundantly clear. My hope would be that perhaps you and the sponsor could sit down and discuss while we can let some other things come for debate before members. And, you know, if you all can address each other's concerns and come to a compromise, then we can try it again. Or if not, try it again later this way. But there are other bills on the calendar that I know sponsors have worked hard and are hoping at least to have their opportunity to hear what members support and oppose.
Well, I do appreciate that. I hear you loud and clear.
Thank you.
Senator from the 24th, you're seeking recognition.
I would ask that bill be laid on the informal
Lay
calendar.
The bill over. Senate Bill 742, the Senator from Phelps.
Mr. President, I move that Senate Bill 742 be taken up for perfection.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion it shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before the body.
Mr. President, I now move that Senate Bill number 742 be declared perfected and ordered printed. I have a floor substitute.
Has it been distributed?
It has been distributed, and I move for it. And I move for its adoption.
Proceed, Senator.
The difference between the Senate substitute and the original bill was there some agreements made within the different providers. They had some concerns, and what the substitute does, it provides that within 48 hours. After a practitioner has a receipt, or after the provider has a receipt of an electronically filed credentialing application by the health carrier, the carrier shall provide a practitioner with electronic access to the carrier's internet web portal to verify the receipt of the application. The original bill said that it had to be they had to be notified. This allows the person applying to access the portal and see that they have been in receipt. So consequently, that meant that we removed the carrier sending written notice of the receipt of application within 5 calendar days since they have application to the portal. There was no need for that. And the substitute provides for the credentialing of the practitioner to be moved to 90 days rather than 60 days that the original bill had after receiving the application. The fourth change was it removed the unfair trade practice provision for repeated violations of the act. And that pretty much sums up what the substitute did and what we're trying to do. We're trying to get practitioners that have been hired by a health carrier to be credentialed and be able to go ahead and send in and be paid for the services that they provide under that carrier. Any questions? I'll try to answer those.
To inquire the senator from Phelps.
Does the senator from Phelps yield?
I do.
Proceed.
Thank you for yielding, Senator, and I apologize. I appreciate your explanation of the bill. I was in the chamber. I was able to hear that. I do not serve on the committee that this bill went through, so I want to get a feeling basically why you introduced the bill, the direction that your bill would have taken the law compared to the current status quo, and then where we find ourselves with the Senate substitute. Because, and I'll just tell you how I see it, before, and this is a huge issue with credentialing, particularly where I live, a lot of the individuals that receive health care where I live get them from either a nurse practitioner as a primary care physician, or we have a lot of J-1 visa physicians that hospitals and clinics hire that come in an underserved area. And then what basically happens, Medicaid is even a problem with this, and I know that's not addressed in your bill, but these independent third-party providers, instead of allowing them to immediately bill, I've heard stories that as much as 6 months in arrearage, if not more, that the insurance company is just kind of twiddling its thumbs and not paying for the services provided to its insured. So I understand, and so I saw pretty much a tough bill that you filed, and then I guess through the committee process, through dealing with the lobbyists and everything else, and knowing that there are senators that will stand up on bills and kill bills because a lobbyist asked them to do so, not because they've ever read the bill, not because they understand what's in the bill, that you've had to make some compromises.
Right.
Is that kind of where we're at?
That's very accurate. And, you know, your time period of 6 months, even up to a year, we've heard, where these guys are providing a service, but they're still not receiving pay or much less pay. And so, you know, I think prompt credentialing, when a person is licensed in the state and they are trained to provide that service, and then you get a healthcare provider that says, well, you know, we're going to get to this, going to get to it, and this thing drags on too long. So we're
They're basically cash flowing off of the either the clinic, the hospital, or the medical provider that's actually providing services for their insured, but because they don't want to pay them, they're basically being cash flowed off of these individuals.
Absolutely right. And, you know, with the and we did make some changes. In the day of computerization, we just felt there was no excuse for this to be going on so long. You know, if someone has and we did make provisions in the bill and in the substitute that, you know, if a person has any kind of history of behavioral disorders or disciplinary actions or, you know, has had problems, then he cannot be credentialed that quickly. He has to overcome that obstacle. But those are pretty easy to find. I mean, most all of the boards of healing arts and different boards post these very quickly when there's a finding.
Yeah, the national database, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
So as I understand it, current law, your original bill was just going to speed up and make requirements in the credentialing process far greater than where current law is.
Yes. And then it was 60 days. We moved that up to 90 because they felt that, you know, there were some agreements made between providers and practitioner groups that says, okay, we can live with 90, but, you know, that seemed...
But current law says they have to credential within 60, and now
that's what we were moving it to.
Okay.
Now it's pretty obscure, and they kind of that's where the loophole's at.
Okay. So what is current law? Because I don't want to pass anything in your bill that makes it easier on these people.
No, in current law, I don't think there is a time frame.
There's no time period over credentialing. That's how we get this 6 month to a year as the insurance companies sit there and are cash flowing off of all of that. So you're actually trying to interject those time periods. You had a tougher bill that you filed, and now the special interests have beaten you down to a pulp where we have what's remaining is the Senate substitute.
Right.
Okay.
And it seems pretty fair.
Okay. And you think this is still in the embodiment in all your work, this is still a step forward from where current law is as embodied in the Senate substitute?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. Mr. President.
Thank you.
Senator from Cape.
If I could inquire the Senator from St. Joe.
The Senator from Buchanan County, do you yield to the inquiry from the Senator from Cape? He does. Proceed.
Senator, one of the things, thank you for yielding, by the way. I hope you had a pleasant Easter.
Yeah.
Do you guys believe in the Easter Bunny in St. Joe?
Absolutely.
Okay. I didn't know if they came along in a Pony Express up there rather than Peter Cottontail.
There's just, you know, there are colored eggs everywhere.
Okay. Well, that's good because I'm glad to hear that St. Joe experiences the same thing as Cape. One of the unique things about the Senate is we have individuals that bring a variety of knowledge and information to this body when they are elected. It's my understanding that you're a licensed physician back in the St. Joe area and have been for a number of years. You've probably dealt with credentialing. You've dealt with billing issues. I don't know if you had an opportunity to hear the Senator from Phelps's explanation, my dialogue with him, but this is a real problem. I saw when the Senator from Phelps introduced this bill, I was supportive of seeing somebody move forward to address this.
I actually introduced a similar bill this year and last year.
Okay.
But my bill didn't move for some reason.
Well,
the Senator from Phelps' bill did.
There's no explanation for Chase.
I'm 100% behind it. I'm appreciative that he's gotten it as far as he has. I'm sad that the special interests have, you know, done the slice and dice on it. But, hey, sometimes, you know, half a loaf is better than no loaf.
Have you had a chance to review and understand?
Yes, I have, and I'm okay with it.
And is your feelings, having dealt with this credentialing issue with insurance providers and how they can delay billing and reimbursement, because the Senator from the first, I won't say many years ago, but years ago, championed prompt pay, where on a different side, they didn't use the credentialing stall, and I think this is one of the loopholes that basically the delays in compensation after the Senator from the first was able to get the prompt pay legislation moving that I've heard is now the new prompt pay. They just call it credentialing.
See, my tact has been to try to increase competition in the healthcare market and drive down the cost of healthcare. And this is one element to that attempt, because by keeping competitors out of the marketplace, by not credentialing them. Or just not paying them. And
I mean, that's a heck of a great way in which to maximize profits.
Right.
Just don't pay your expenses.
Right. And so it just helps to keep the healthcare costs high. So the Senator from Phelps's bill will help lower healthcare costs, and it's just one of many things that we could do to do
that. And you're in agreement that we're not... although it's not ideal from the perspective of us that may think that this credentialing has been used as an offensive weapon by insurance companies to deny competition to the marketplace or to deny timely compensation to a clinic, a physician, or a hospital, this is still a net step forward if implemented in
the field. You know, we're making a few yards. It's not a touchdown, but we're moving the ball down the field.
And as the senator from the first would tell you, that's basically how he had to proceed as he championed the prompt pay issue. And time after time after time, I think it was almost 3 years that he went through to be able to get that to move forward.
I wish we could do the same for CON. That would really help competition.
I hear you. So based upon your background, education, and experience, you would say that this goes as far as you think, still a net positive, doesn't weaken existing law, and is a step in the right direction?
Yes, Senator.
All right. Thank you very much, Senator. Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on the perfection motion offered by the senator for adoption of the fourth substitute from the senator from Phelps? Hearing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
I renew my motion.
The senator from Phelps renews his motion that the Senate adopt the Senate substitute. Is many of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary, no. Ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have adopted the Senate substitute. We're back on Senate Bill 742 as amended by the substitute. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Hearing none, Senator from Phelps, you're recognized to close.
Mr. President, I renew my motion on Senate Bill 742 as amended by the floor substitute.
The Senator from Phelps renews his motion that Senate Bill 742 as amended by the substitute be declared perfected and ordered printed. As many of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary, no. Ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have the Senate bill is declared perfected and ordered printed. Staying on that same order of business, Senate bills for perfection, the formal calendar, Senate Bill 659, Senator from Lawrence.
I ask that bill be placed on the informal calendar.
The bill shall be placed on the informal calendar. Staying on that same order of business, Senate bills for perfection, the formal calendar, Senate Bill 668, the senator from the very first district in St. Louis County, Senator Lemke.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill 668 be brought before the body.
You've heard the motion from the senator from the first. All those of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary, no. Ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill's before the body. Senator from the first.
Thank you, Mr. President. Now I move that Senate Bill 668 be perfected and printed. Mr. President, this is a very, very, very simple bill. It's one paragraph, and what it would do is in the county which I reside and where the first district also resides, that the collector within that county would be directed to make sure that the tax bills go out by the 20th day of October so that we don't realize what happened in our county, Mr. President, that happened in 2010. And in 2010, in St. Louis County, they waited until the day after Election Day to mail out the tax bills to the residents of St. Louis County. Two county employees who asked not to be identified confirmed this and told the St. Louis Post-Dispatch that the county's director of revenue ordered that the bills be held to after Election Day. I think it's important to the taxpayers that those that are in elected office be open and honest and upfront about how much of their money that they have earned will be going to pay their taxes. This bill is about transparency and allowing the people to know what their taxes are, whether they've gone up or gone down before Election Day. You know, I think that it's important for us to realize that there was a method to the madness of our founding fathers in that those that were in charge of appropriations and where the budget started, those elected officials came before the people every 2 years Every 2 years, Mr. President, so they would be held responsible. This bill, again, is about transparency, and for those that are elected by the people for this important function, that they wouldn't hold out until after Election Day to send out the tax bills. With that, Mr. President, I'd be happy to address any questions.
You've heard the motion from the senator from the 1st District. Does any senator desire to be heard? The senator from the 10th is on her feet. For what reason do you rise?
To inquire of the senator from the 1st.
Senator from the 1st, you yield to the inquiry.
Gladly.
He does proceed.
Thanks, Senator. This sounds like a good idea. Just my quick question for you is there any recourse for the taxpayers if they don't do it? Are there any teeth? Is there a punishment?
There is not, Senator.
Okay. I guess we're just hoping that they're going to do what
they
we say.
They follow the law, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. We would hope that they would.
But I would guess that there certainly could be a class action suit filed on behalf of the taxpayers. I mean, they would have standing then if they decided to do this again and send bills out after the, you know,
well, and I suspect if this makes it into law and they don't do it, and it would always be something where we could come back in the future and say, okay, if you don't do this, you're going to have this penalty or something like that. But you would hope that they would just do it.
Yeah, I guess my intention here isn't to put any undue burden as far as a penalty. It's to direct through statute to St. Louis County, because of this, here's the consequences. So I agree, Senator, if they persist in this behavior, then maybe we should come back and insert a penalty clause.
Give them the benefit of the doubt initially. All right, thanks, Senator.
Thank you, Senator.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on the motion from the senator from the 1st? Hearing none, Senator, you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I renew my motion.
Senator from the 1st renews his motion that Senate Bill 668 be declared perfected and ordered printed. As many of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary, no. Ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is declared perfected and ordered printed. Staying on that same order of business, Senate Bill 843, the senator from the 24th.
Mr. President, I move that Senate Bill 843 with committee substitute be taken up for perfection.
You've heard the motion from the senator from the 24th. All those of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye. Those of the contrary, no. Ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before the body. Senator from the 24th.
Mr. President, I now move that Senate committee substitute for Senate Bill 843 be adopted. I also have a Senate floor sub that I'd like to send forward.
Send it forward. Has it been distributed?
It has not. It has to be read.
The substitute. Senator, would you like for a waiver of the reading and not close on it until it's been distributed?
I do.
Hearing no objection, the reading shall be waived. Senator, do you care to explain the substitute?
Mr. President, this is a bill that was brought forward by a local citizen in my community in conjunction with my House Rep, and the idea here is we had a biker, someone who was a biker who was ticketed when he had his bike rack on the back of his car, and his bike was in the back of the car, and the police couldn't see his license plate, and he was issued a ticket, and apparently this is somewhat of a phenomenon, and this would just create, it would allow for the creation of a third plate that the biker would purchase. And the reason there's a Senate substitute is that the Department of Revenue had some ideas that they wanted to add to the bill. They're comfortable with the bill, but they wanted to clarify. So it's a really straightforward thing. I apologize for not getting it earlier to the Transportation Committee. I think it might have ended up inside of an omnibus bill had it gotten there earlier. And with that, I will take any questions.
Does any senator desire to be heard on the adoption of the Senate substitute? The senator from the 10th, for what reason do you rise?
To inquire of the senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th, you yield.
Do you?
He does proceed.
Thanks, Senator. So there were actually instances where folks received tickets because their license plate was obscured.
Obstructed, yes.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. See, I kind of like that my license plate is obstructed by my bike rack, because then I can go through those red light cameras, and if they take a picture,
and
they can't. So I don't have to have the third tag. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, and actually, if the senator from 8th, who's not on the floor, if we actually passed his bill for one license plate, there would be a means by which you couldn't be photographed coming or going.
Wow. So. Okay. Okay, but this would not be mandatory. This would just be optional if
That's
someone
correct.
In an abundance of caution wanted to do that. And then you said that the Missouri Department of Revenue had some good ideas. And while I'm sure they are good ideas, I just wanted to go over them with you quickly.
Sure.
Did they
do
you want to explain?
I can tell you. So they asked we make it very specific and clear that the temporary plate is printed with black marker on paper stock, with a configuration that matches the existing plate.
Okay.
The third plate be placed in the interior of the rear window such that it not view the driver, it does not obstruct the driver's view, yet it's clearly visible.
Okay.
And they provide that the third plate is only authorized to be used when the actual plates are still affixed to the car. So it doesn't mean you
okay.
avoid having the second plate. And then it just makes it clear replacement temporary plates can be issued as needed upon payment of a $7.50 fee.
Okay, and how long is the temporary plate valid? I mean, the reason I'm asking is my bike rack goes on in, you know, around Memorial Day and stays on until Labor Day. Is this something where I could get the third plate for the whole summer?
It's the same. No, it's the same time frame under which your existing two plates.
Oh, so I can use it indefinitely.
So, yeah, it's the third
okay.
plate. It's under the same. Everything. It's you know, the same time frame under which your current plates exist today.
Okay, that makes sense. And then it'll be look something similar to, and we wouldn't make it ourselves out of stock paper, white stock paper and black marker. This would be something that they would do at
the issue, yes.
Okay. And it probably looks similar to what they do at when we buy a car.
Yeah, and actually there's a bill we heard in transportation that actually would change how those temporary plates would look.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, sounds like a great bill. Thanks, Senator.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on the adoption of the substitute? The senator from the Jefferson was the first one. The chair saw on his feet. For what reason did he rise?
To inquire the senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th, you yield. He does proceed.
I guess my question was to your last point. The senator in front of me here has the bill that's going to replace the current way that you're issued temporary plates where you'll actually have a printed,
I guess,
heavy paper
stock,
cardboard
yeah.
stock yeah. plate. Will this affect that bill if his passes in any way?
No, I was just suggesting that the nature of the temporary plate would be changed if this other bill were to pass.
I know I don't have a problem with your bill, but there's nothing that would prohibit or stop anybody in your district right now that has the bike rack on the back from just moving their plate. You know, I see in the southern part of my county and a lot in the senator from the thirds, a lot of people in trucks just have their license plate in their back window.
So yeah, again, this
I guess what I'm saying is your bill necessary? Because you can move your license plate now if you feel like it's obstructed.
Right. This is at the discretion of the biker. You know, it's the convenience of having a third plate to put in the window and not having to, you know, remove the plate.
So, okay. So if we do away with the temporary license plate as it is today, which is just on paper stock and black marker,
right,
and replace it, which I hope Senator's bill passes, well, now will we have to get that type of plate in an unobstructed view for people that?
Well, you'd have your two permanent plates, not permanent, but you know, two that would be affixed to the front and the back of your car,
sure.
And you'd purchase the third temporary plate that, at your discretion, when you know you're blocking your back view, you can stick in your back window.
Right, and the way you have this in the bill is it's going to go back to the temporary plate of a black magic marker on a white piece of paper.
Right, which that's the way the world works today, right? That's the way temporary.
That's way it is now. If that bill passes, we're doing away with that type of temporary plate.
And that's, you know, that's fine. And my thinking is that we would redefine what a temporary plate is in the Senator from 20's bill. Then this would suggest that you're buying a temporary plate. It just happens to change
the configuration.
Okay, even though I'm reading your summary, I didn't read the actual bill, but
right.
In your summary it says requires the temporary plate to be printed in black marker on paper stock with a configuration that matches your actual plate. So I guess my question is, should we kind of mirror your two bills together in the instance that they might both pass?
And again, maybe that's an amendment we should make on this very simple bill. I don't think it's a huge leap to think that if this bill comes to pass, that those that desire a third, the temporary plate, would end up with the new temporary plate design.
Okay. Well, I guess when I'm reading on page 5 that it specifically spells out that it's black marker on a piece of paper.
Right, the way it is now. But it's changed. We think it might change. So if I were to write the bill with the new, if I were to write the bill with a new version of a temporary plate, having not become law, I'd be making new law with respect to that.
I would suggest you and the senator from Polk, if those two bills advanced, you still have time to mirror that language in this bill.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you, Senator.
Senator, sir, desire to be heard. The senator from Cape, for a reason he rise.
To inquire the senator from Jefferson.
Senator from Jefferson County, do you yield to the inquiry?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
I like your new hairdo.
What's that?
I like your new do.
Yeah, I know. They buy one, get one free. So I
they
got
always give
both,
me the
I got both at the same time. So
both pairs.
Yeah.
They always give me the receipt at Great Clips that I can get money off the next time I come in.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, I appreciate it. I went out this weekend and I did some home shopping and picked up a shop vac / Flobee. So you remember the old Flobees that you could get the settings on and back in the day. I mean,
yourself.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, I was glad you got recognized. I was going to have the same inquiry. And with all due respect where the senator from the 24th is, I know this is a tragedy that the Land Rovers with their bike rack on the back of them, none of the senator from the 24th people know what a screwdriver is where they could physically unscrew their license plate and actually do something else. So I'm glad to see that we're going to fix this tragedy for the Land Rovers with the bike racks flowing through the bourgeois of St. Louis. But at the end of the day, you're 100% correct. If the senator from the Polk's bill passes, and I don't know. Has it passed the Senate? I was going to.
I think it's on our perfection calendar right now. It's been laid over. Oh, it's on the formal calendar. It'll be laid over on the informal calendar.
Okay. So is this, it's the next bill, 818. So is that what we've been talking about? Or
to lay that over as soon as we go to it. And I guess we're on the informal calendar right now.
No, we're on the formal
calendar. So he's going to lay it over onto the informal calendar.
Okay. Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is you've raised a very valid point. If we're going to give up on the senator from Polk's bill, then we can go ahead and do this.
Then this bill's okay.
Then
but
this
if this passes
okay.
And the senator from the 24th
you've got
passed.
Two different types of temporary tags
right.
Now in Missouri state statute. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me when we know what we're trying to do here. And I don't know why.
And I think
we're
the senator
that.
From the 24th point was that if it passes, that somehow the statute
it won't
just correct itself, and it doesn't
no,
work
it doesn't
like
work that way. The reservoir statutes is going to have to publish this, and this will be the law in subsection 9
right.
That when you want a temporary tag on your Land Rover for your bike rack, then you'll follow this set of rules, which is the black magic marker, and if anyone else wants a
well, if anybody else buys a car and doesn't get their license plate right away
right.
For the next 30 days, they'll have the senator from Polk's temporary license.
Right. So I guess that's the broader dialogue that are we going to – and and maybe I need to inquire the senator from Polk, but are we giving up on his idea? Because it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
I would say these two bills need to be married together
exactly.
And have this.
Exactly. Yeah. One way or the other. All right. Mr. President.
Thank you. Senator from Cape.
Can I inquire the senator from Polk?
Senator from Polk. Do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you for yielding. Senator, do you understand what the senator from Jefferson and I are saying?
I do.
Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah. I need to get with the senator there and see if we can't work this out, because there's also a different fee structure in there also.
Yeah.
That needs to be addressed, because I think in his is $7.50 and mine has a maximum of $5. So that needs to be addressed too. So.
Well, I mean, since these are for Land Rovers, they could probably, you know, do like $17.50 or $17,050. You know, or something. We may be able to balance our budget. Let me inquire the senator from the 24th. Ms. President.
Senator from Cape.
If I can inquire the senator from the 24th.
I'm so very glad.
Senator
you
from the
did.
24th, do you yield?
Yes.
I'm so
Senator
glad.
From the 24th, yes. Do you yield?
I do yield.
He does yield. Proceed.
What?
So I'm glad Go you ahead. Did inquire me. I appreciate that. I need to defend the bourgeoisie. Is that what it was?
The bourgeoisie driving around the Land Rovers with their bike rack on the back.
Yeah,
it just
so
happens I got passed by the lobbyist that I think you're doing this for. As the white Land Rover with his bike rack on the back.
The bikers biking their way to those Foundation Formula meetings where they're going to figure out how they're going to fund the schools all around the state. You know, so let's make fun of the
bourgeoisie.
I'm with
you. Yeah. I'm with you.
Yeah, that's great. No. Okay. I appreciate this dialogue. We'll fix it.
Right.
Should we
lay this over and then?
I was going to inquire of you first, but now that you inquired of me,
perfect.
Again, to defend the Land Rover. Well, actually, it's the senator from Lee Summit.
Well, if the Secretary of the Senate could properly record that you have, to the fullest of any senator in the history of the state of Missouri, defended the Range Rover ownership segment of the state of Missouri. I think that is a valid point that needs to be noted in the journal.
Well, that's a distinction that I will treasure.
Thank you, Senator.
I'd like to inquire the Senator.
Thank you.
Senator from the 24th.
Hold on.
Oh, no,
I still have the floor.
That's correct.
Senator from Cape still has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. President.
The senator from the 8th was first on his feet. For what reason do you rise?
Fire the senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th, you yield. He does. Proceed.
Senator, I have a bill that I filed this year, and I believe you sit on transportation.
Correct.
And I am very interested in your bill because I see it as a possible vehicle for the bill that I have got into committee a couple times and had hearings on, but it has just stopped right there.
You mean that this is the one-plate bill?
This is the one-plate bill. It would solve your problem for your Land Rover situation as well. If you just required one plate on the automobile, whether it be a front plate or a rear plate, that person wouldn't have gotten a ticket, from my understanding, is why you filed this bill.
That's correct.
What do you think? You're going to get ready to lay this over. I'm wondering if we could potentially talk offline about this, and maybe when you bring it back up, we'll have an amendment ready.
Remind me of where's that bill?
That bill is stuck in transportation committee.
Has yet to been voted on.
I have tried, but no, I have not had success on getting
it. That's a positive fiscal note, does it not?
It's a positive fiscal note towards the road fund, yes. It's about $1.5 million towards the road fund. Most of that money goes to the road fund.
And
not general.
Having spent more and more time on your side of the state, cars look a lot cooler without that front plate.
There you go. I guess
I'm coming around, but, you know, you and I got at least two more years ago, so I'm coming around. But.
Okay. So just we'll talk offline, but I'm interested in potentially using this as a vehicle for that other bill. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President.
President, I ask that this bill
Senator from the 24th.
I ask that this bill be laid over in the informal calendar.
The bill will be laid on the informal calendar. Senator from St. Francis.
Briefly inquire the senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th, you yield. Do you yield, Senator?
I do yield.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you. I appreciate you laying this bill over because we've taken care of the problem of the Land Rovers, and I've got to do some research and see what do we do if we don't have a back windshield in my district. And it's going to take some time. Thank you.
Actually,
Or a bumper if you don't have a back end of the car to
actually
put the tail.
I might wonder, in your part of the state, do the bikers wear those little shorts, or what do they actually wear when they're on their bikes?
Yeah, it's interesting. They call them cutoffs where I'm at. See you. Thank you.
Staying on that same order of business, in that calendar, Senate Bills for Perfection, the formal calendar, Senate Bill 818, Senator from Polk.
Thank you, Mr. President. I request that be put on the informal calendar.
That bill will be placed on the informal calendar. Staying on that same order of business, Senate Bill 628, Senator from Boone.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill number 628 be brought before the body for perfection.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from Boone. All those of the opinion that motion shall prevail say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary, no. Ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill's before the body. Senator from Boone.
Thank you, Mr. President. I now move that Senate Bill 628 be perfected and ordered printed. This deals with the Inmate Security Fund, which is a $2 fee on court cases. And really, this is a clarification. This was brought to me by the City of Centralia, because what the bill originally did was it created a $2 fee that went for the development of biometric verification by local law enforcement for inmates. And the problem is you know, they also need verification of people who are in a temporary facility. They may be in the jail. They're not inmates per se. They're not convicted, but they are arrested. And so this would allow biometric verification, this fund to be used for using biometric verification to identify people after they're charged or arrested, not just when they're an inmate. And then also, the other thing this doesn't do is the language in the bill doesn't allow for the, it allows for maintenance but not repair and replacement of biometric equipment. And so this would allow for the repair and replacement of biometric equipment. And these are eye scanners and things like that that they use to identify people that are in jail who may not be who they say they are.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from Boone County. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Hearing none, Senator, you're recognized. Close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
The Senator from Boone renews his motion that Senate Bill 628 be declared perfected and ordered printed. As many of the opinion that motion shall prevail say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary, no. Ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is declared perfected and ordered printed. Staying on that same order of business, Senate Bill 804, the Senator from St. Francois.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that Senate Bill 804 be taken up for perfection.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from St. Francis. All those of the opinion that motion shall prevail say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary, no. Ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill's before the body. Senator from St. Francis.
Thank you, Mr. President. Now I move that the Senate Bill 804 be declared perfected and ordered printed. Mr. President, we talked about this on the floor, went through the committee. We're having a problem in the state of Missouri. Tough economic times. There are small business owners that own properties that rent them out. And in my area, it takes sometimes 90, 120 days to get to court if somebody has quit paying their rent. And they're essentially stealing from the owner of the building. We've got protections in the laws to protect the tenants. And I'm not trying to deal with any of those and change any of those. But what I am trying to do here is, once you've went to court and waited the 90 days to go to court or 120 days to court, and a judgment of eviction is made because you haven't paid your rent or for whatever reason, this bill gives the tenant 10 days to file a motion of appeal or vacate the premises or have the judgment set aside. Now, these options are exercised. The tenant will be considered having willfully refused to vacate and surrender possession of the property. This makes the refusal a Class B misdemeanor. The problem is, once you're given eviction notice, there is no incentive for a tenant to leave. And we've got people that are waiting months to leave after they've waited months to get them to court, and we have no way of enforcing anything. And I talked to tenants landlord owners all over the state. One of them offered their tenant after the conviction 2 months' rent, cash, if they would just move. Please, just get out. If you get out by the end of the month, I'll give you 2 months. I know this is stealing from you, but I'll give you 2 months' rent. No, we can stay here for an extended period of time, so there's no reason. I don't know any other situation where people are stealing from somebody and we continue to let it go on.
This Class B misdemeanor are punishable by up to just $500 when most of them, that's less than 1 month's rent, or 6 months in jail. But at least it would go on the report, so when they're looking at trying to rent another apartment or house, potential landlords would at least know that they've been convicted. They won't give up the property as the courts declared, and therefore they've been given a fine or whatever the resolution was. So at least it puts some teeth in our law that when we get a judgment from the court and somebody gets out, that they have to do it within 10 days. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, Mr. President. Otherwise, I would renew my motion.
Does any senator desire to be heard? The senator from the 11th.
May I inquire the senator from 3rd?
Senator from 3rd, do you yield?
Yes.
He does. Proceed.
I understand the problem. I get where you're getting to, but the teeth in the law part, are we criminalizing something, even if it's at the misdemeanor level, that's now in the status quo civil? I mean, I get where you're coming
right,
from. But
right, but if somebody won't get out and won't pay, what good is civil? If you've already got the civil conviction and they won't pay, what good is have a civil penalty? Yes, it does put a $500 up to a $500 and a six or up to a 6 month in jail. So yes, it does have is a crime.
And just walk through me. I heard your explanation. I did listen. Mm-hmm. Walk through how we get to the misdemeanor. What happens? What steps?
What steps? You first, before any landlord takes them to court, is that they're behind on the rent. Then in our area, in a lot of areas of the state, it takes 3 to 4 months to get a court date.
Okay.
They're in there rent-free, stealing from the landlord for the next 3 months or 4 months. Then it goes to court. It's proven in court that they need to be evicted. And the judge says, yes, issues the eviction order. And if after 10 days, the judge...
And you don't think Senator paying judges more and having a better retirement for judges would solve that? I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Well, after they get the judgment, if after 10 days the judgment is pretty simple, the judgment is not set aside or application for trial is not been filed, the defendant shall willfully refuse to vacate and surrender the possession of the property to the plaintiff or the plaintiff's agent, the defendant shall be guilty of a Class B misdemeanor. Now, I used to keep in my drawer all the offenses in the state of Missouri, Class B misdemeanor. This puts some teeth to the law, but it only puts baby teeth. Because right. When you've already stolen on average $1,500 to $2,000, putting a $500 potential maximum fine
right. Okay.
Is not huge.
Well, I remember, I read your bill, and I just want to make sure before we...
Well, Senator,
add the teeth, I just want to make sure what the teeth
right.
were.
Yeah,
You're an excellent bill handler. You're very balanced in approach to things, and I just
well, we
I just wanted to make
we
sure
didn't
before
make
we added
it
the teeth.
Completely crazy to on that where they get, but this is getting to be a problem because it used to be lot of my people said that it used to be you'd have one apartment where somebody refused to pay. Now, I talked to a group of landlord. House owners and apartment owners, some of them are up to 20-something percent of their properties are not paying.
Right.
And when it's a 6 to 8 month property, I talked to one that rents trailer pads. And what happened is the people refused to pay. They finally got the court order to evict them. They just left. They tore off the doors. They have left. The trailer's in the park. And it took them $6,000 to go back through court, get possession of the trailer, pay to have it moved so that they could rent the pad for $150 a month. But it became such an eyesore and animals were living in it and everything else that they had to do something. And so what we're trying to do is small business owners that have as much as 20% or 25% of their houses and apartments that the people are behind. And what happens is somebody says, well, they can't really throw you out. You get the conviction, they can't really let them come after us. Don't worry about it. It just grows on itself. And it's a tough economic time, but it's tough for the people that have mortgaged their homes and mortgaged their futures and taken out big mortgages of apartments not to have their renters paying.
Well, I just wanted to make sure, and I think you have. I mean, you've satisfied any
Yeah, this is not going overboard. It's not throwing them in jail and beating them and sending them to the
war farm. There's a balance in all of this. There are renters. There are also slumlords. And you try to find this balance.
So we try to find the balance
where everybody has due process and treated fairly.
You're exactly right. We did not change any renters' protections in any of the bills. We just wanted to give it some teeth so there's a reason to have to get them out of the place once they've got
Good work, Senator. Thanks.
Thank you.
Does any other senator wish to be heard on the motion? Senator from the 14th. For what?
From the 3rd.
Does the senator from the 3rd yield?
I certainly do.
The senator yields. Proceed.
President, I wanted to thank you for offering this bill. I think at the beginning of the session, your staff contacted my staff because I had a bill very similar to this when I was in the House.
They took some of the things out of it, stole it.
Yeah, but I didn't want to say that. But
I'm glad convicted of guilty of a Class B.
As long as it gets passed, I'm happy.
Good.
You know, I don't care about the credit, but we have a problem in St. Louis County, and I happen to represent a lot of people who rent and also a lot of people who are renters, and, you know, they have a philosophy, more ownership, the better. But in so many circumstances, St. Louis County hasn't done anything to get these people out. It even happened to my mom once where the person didn't move out for like 8 months.
And what do they do? I had a guy
and
come
so
up to me this
week.
And
so you're losing money, and then you're having to pay your mortgage. You're having to pay for all the different changes and all this other kind of stuff.
And you're expected to keep the grass cut and everything, even though they're not paying. You're expected, if they walk out and they leave a water bill, you're expected to pay it. You just would like them to get out so that somebody that's paying will come in.
Yeah, exactly. So I just wanted to thank you. It's fine if you borrowed some of my language. Of a bill that I filed 2 or 3 times. It just needs to be addressed. I understand there are a lot of people who are struggling now, but, you know, this is a business. And, you know, there are certain amenities that you provide to some people, but when you're clearly taking advantage of a situation, that it's pretty bad, and it needs to be handled, and the people need to be out. So I completely support your bill here.
Well, I appreciate your support. I talked to one small business owner just a week or so ago. He says, you know, everybody thinks that anybody that owns apartments is rich. He said, I've got this thing leveraged to the hilt, and I've got all these people that are not paying me, and I'm in danger of defaulting on my loan because these people won't pay me. Then when I go to court, they won't get out. What am I supposed to do?
Exactly. You
know? And so I do appreciate it. But, Senator, I've been around here long enough to know that a lot of the best bills are not written. They're stolen. And so I'm happy to
start. Well, I'm glad. Maybe I can claim that with some of my constituents that one of my bills was stolen and finally passed. But again, as long as this practice, as long as there's a new adoption, I fully support it. I don't need the credit, but it needs to happen because a lot of owners are losing money, and you know they're sacrificing their lives just for someone else. And when you get to 5, 6, 7, 8 months or longer and the courts are not doing anything, it's a bad disposition. So, again, just thank you.
Thank you for your support, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator wish to be heard on the pending motion? Senator from the 15th.
I declare the senator from the 3rd.
Does the senator from St. Francis yield?
I yield.
He does. Proceed.
I appreciate you bringing this forward. I've actually worked in this area for a while, and it can be incredibly frustrating on both sides, actually, for landlords and for tenants. And
you're right, in legal practice worked in this area? Can you believe a city the size of Farmington has an attorney that's their full, that's all the practice?
They probably have a rent and possession docket, and they sit there, and because a lot of these cases, to your point, it's incredibly inefficient because usually what happens, when you file the case, the next month you have an initial court appearance. Generally speaking, people don't show up. You can take a default judgment, but you're reticent to do that because you want to make sure the defendant has every opportunity to be there because a default judgment sometimes is not the best way to go, especially on these because there's still some ambiguity as to whether or not they could show up at the next court hearing or move to set aside the default judgment. At that point, the wheels are already set in motion for the eviction. It makes it tougher. So
yeah, and you're an attorney, but I bet you a lot of the people that are stealing
their rent know the system better than you almost.
Well,
they've talked to everybody, say, oh, you're going to get this much time, and if they do this to you, then you can do this, and if you'll just sit out, you know.
Well, you know, I don't know if I ascribe those motives necessarily. I think the situation that a lot of people in a residential setting get into, they have a lot of challenges, they miss their rent. Now, if they don't have a lease, what's interesting is you have to give them notice in the month that they're, let's say I'm the landlord, you're the tenant, and we're in April, okay, but we don't have a lease. You're going technically month to month. I have to give you that notice in April and give you the month you're in plus 30 days. So you technically are not in violation of the month-to-month tenancy until June 1st, okay? When June 1st hits and you haven't left, then I can file a lawsuit, which probably doesn't get heard till July, at which point you probably don't have a judgment until August, at which point it's probably not final till later. So by the time you get somebody out of there, it's really probably a six-month kind of a deal.
Yeah.
And there's two different kinds of cases you can file. It's not really relevant for this, which is rent and possession, which means if they get current up to the date of the judgment, to the date of the court date, they can stay. Or there's an unlawful detainer, which means whenever they get notice and they're there unlawfully, they can't ever go back. They're out, and you can get double damages. There's a whole deal. The only
that's why I want to point out that we didn't change all that
right.
First part. We just said once you've got the judgment, you should, at that point, after you waited for the judgment, there should be some teeth in it to get you out.
Right. And the concern that the Center from the 11th has, when I first saw this bill, there's a little concern in the legal system about crossing the line between a civil remedy and a criminal remedy. But I think the difference here is that at that point, it's really a trespass. I mean, it's no different than coming into someone's property that you don't own, you have no right to be in any longer. And
well, that's true. I relate it to it stealing.
Right.
Every month you're stealing. I have a commodity, and that is this rent that I can charge people. And if every month you're stealing that from me, I don't know where else we allow stealing. Continue, get a court judgment, and let them continue to steal.
Yeah.
To me, if I've got this commodity, and that's my business. Is that I rent places and you're stealing that from me, it needs to be stopped. Now, we didn't go overboard. I tried to balance it. We didn't go overboard. We didn't take the consumer protections out of it. But once you get a judgment, you should be...
Yeah, you can still... And the one question I do have, though, is... And I apologize. I was on the dais and I wanted to ask you this offline. But I believe the judgment has to be final, correct? I mean, all avenues of appeal have been exhausted at that point.
Yeah.
Okay. And you would probably, if for some reason that's not, I mean, you're amenable to that. Your intention is for the course of this process, well, to run its course, and at which point you're not supposed to be there anymore, you don't have the right to appeal anymore. At that point, you got to get out or you can be charged criminally.
Right.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, I appreciate it. I think that this is something that probably needs to move forward because you do cross the line into trespass. So I appreciate the inquiry.
Thank you.
Does any other senator wish to be heard on this motion? Senator from Cape.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just wanted to make, if I could inquire the senator from St. Francis.
Does the senator from St. Francis yield? He does. Proceed.
I'm sorry. I stepped out. I know you had some other people that were here, and we had some discussions. This is drafted correctly. Okay, your bill is drafted correctly. In an unlawful detainer in a rent and possession case, landlords have two causes of action. Unlawful detainer, rent and possession. That is done on the associate circuit level. An appeal from the associate circuit level is called a trial de novo to the circuit court. It's not an appeal. Under Missouri Supreme Court rule, a judgment becomes final 30 days plus 10. So, you've got it written correctly. I want to make sure that's understood.
This is like a love fest. I've had four inquiries, okay. And they're all farming.
Okay. All right. Well, I just didn't know where everyone was, but
this is a reasonable response. We didn't go overboard and throw these people and beat them. We didn't take their rights away for the appeal. But once there's a judgment, they need to get out.
Right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator wish to be heard? Senator from the 15th.
Inquire of the Senator from Cape.
Does the Senator from Cape yield?
I yield.
He yields. Proceed.
You're right. And that's what I was getting at. And I came down from the dais and was quickly, and I thought this was okay. But, I mean, statutorily, these are an associate circuit cases. So the appeal within 10 days is de novo, which means basically the defendant can have a do-over. I mean, that's what... That's
there's no race judicata. There's no points of error. It is like all the admitted evidence goes away, and it is now tried on the associate circuit.
So you have, you really have, in those
cases. It's not an appeal where you write a brief and you had to have objections. It's like a complete do-over.
It is the maximum for folks who are concerned about the people that are being evicted or potentially have this crime. It is the maximum amount of protection because whatever was, you weren't there. The best case in the world, Perry Mason's going up against the guy from My Cousin Vinny. Who, you know, couldn't get a word
out. Atticus Finch sitting on the bench.
Yeah, I mean, you start over and you go to circuit court. And then if you lose in circuit court...
Then you have 30 days plus 10
then you can,
and an entire appeal.
To the Court of Appeals.
Level.
And then if you don't like that, you can go to Supreme Court, yada. So
applications of transfer on and on and on.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
Does any other senator wish to be heard? Senator from the 4th.
Inquire the senator from Cape very briefly.
Senator from Cape, do you yield?
I yield.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. Yes. This is obviously not an area that I practice in. I don't know anything about
it. I just have a lot of trailer parks in my district, so I'm familiar with it.
But I'm sitting here listening to the debate. Are we being harsher on renters that can't pay their bills than we are on homeowners that can't pay their bills?
Well, we're pretty harsh. I mean, we just took $40 million and are spending it in the budget from these poor homeowners that got criminally ejected from their homes. So I don't know how any harsher you can get than what...
But we didn't charge a homeowner...
In practice. Say again?
We didn't charge a homeowner with a misdemeanor.
Well, but the homeowner owned their home until they were dispossessed. If the homeowner stayed... That homeowner would be guilty of trespass and conversion, possibly. And those criminal penalties are much higher than...
Okay. So those don't apply to renters, then?
Well, it's arguable because of the protections that are in state statute that basically run common law and statute. They're commonly referred to as squatter's rights.
Right.
So we have common law and we have actual statutes that are different than how homeowners, because homeowners own fee simple to the title, all right? They're not guilty of trespass. The only thing that you've done as a homeowner is you have collateralized that home to get credit, to get a line of money. A more commonly referred to as a mortgage, first or second. So then what they have is a process in which to sell your home because it was the secured collateral. So it's apples and oranges, not oranges and oranges,
well,
in my opinion.
Yes and no. I mean, if a foreclosed on home, the homeowner doesn't leave.
Say again?
If a home is foreclosed on, and most foreclosures don't
sure
go
they
through.
Do. If the bank takes possession of it, sure they do.
Well, that's my question. Yeah.
If
the bank come in and throw them out.
The sheriff basically sells it at the courthouse steps, or you do a short sale with the bank, but the bank will depossess. That's part of all, I just refinanced yesterday. We moved the title, and if my wife is going to have tenancy in the entirety, and it's going to be me and her as husband and wife owning the house, I said, you're going to own the debt too. So, we refinanced in both of our names on the house. We now have tenancy in the entirety and own the house as husband and wife. Part of the documents that you sign is a contractual eviction process.
Right.
Where you will be so any of those foreclosures is a contractual action, not a unlawful detainer, which is a statutory action, or a rent in possession, which is a statutory created action.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Senator.
Yep. Thank you.
Does any other senator wish to be heard on the bill? Seeing none, Senator from St. Francois,
you're I close!
Thank you.
The Senator from St. Francois renews his motion that Senate Bill number 804 be declared perfected and ordered printed. As many as are of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary, say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is declared perfected and ordered printed. We are on the order of business of Senate bills for perfection. The next bill is Senate Bill 903. Senator from the 24th.
Mr. President, I ask that that bill be laid on the informal calendar.
That bill will be laid on the informal calendar. Senator from Lawrence.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would ask that Senate Bill 807 be laid on the informal calendar.
I'm sorry? Okay. The next order of business is Senate Bill 807. Senator from Lawrence.
Thank you, Mr. President. I ask that that bill laid on the informal calendar.
That bill will be laid on the informal calendar. The next bill is Senate Bill 909. Senator from the 7th.
Likewise, I ask, Mr. President, that that bill be laid on the informal calendar.
That bill will be laid on the informal calendar. Senator from Lawrence.
Then the next order of business will be announcements.
Announcements. Yes. Senator from Stoddard, for what purpose do you seek recognition?
Mr. President, would you please refer House Bill 1104 with a Senate committee substitute to the Committee on Ways and Means and Fiscal Oversight?
It will be so referred. We are on the order of business of announcements. Seeing none, Senator from Lawrence. Senator from Clay, for what purpose do you seek recognition?
Thank you, Mr. President. I have an announcement. Your Committee on Health, Mental Health, Seniors, and Families will be meeting immediately upon adjournment in SCR1. Probably for only a brief executive session.
Any other announcements? Senator from Boone.
The Committee on Appropriations will convene about 15 minutes after adjournment here this evening.
Announcements. Senator from the 13th.
The Democratic Caucus will meet my office upon adjournment for a brief meeting. Thank you.
Further announcements. Senator from Lawrence.
Thank you, Mr. President. No other business coming before the body. I move the Senate adjourn under the rules.
The motion has been made by the Senator from Lawrence that the Senate be adjourned under the rules. As many as are of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye. Opposed? No, the ayes have it. We are adjourned under the rules.